And good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Franklin Field. Today, it's the Quakers and the Harvard Crimson. Welcome to PennAthletics.com for the Pepsi pregame show featuring the independent Blue Cross Al Bagnoli show, which we'll get to in just a few minutes. Quakers 4-4, losers of three straight, eliminated from an Ivy title. However, they could play spoiler here against the 7-1 Crimson and a Harvard team that comes to town 4-1. Harvard has defeated the Quakers the last two times these teams have matched up, and both games have been handily handled by the Harvard Crimson. Matt Leon and Hench Norrie will be along for our broadcast on the Penn Sports Network. And it's one of the big games here in the Ivy League. And the other big game, Princeton taking on Yale up in New Haven. And we will be bringing you updates on that. But before we waste any time, why don't we bring you the Independence Blue Cross Al Bagnoli show as the Quakers coach talks about today's game with Harvard. The Independence Blue Cross Al Bagnoli show as the Quakers get ready for their home finale welcoming Harvard to town. And first of all, Coach, seems like we've been here before. Another hard-fought overtime game and a 31-30 loss to Princeton. And I guess we could rehash a lot of the same stuff, but I think from a positive standpoint, I thought your team showed incredible character after what they'd gone through the last 2 weeks, down two touchdowns in the fourth quarter. They fight back, take it to overtime, take it to a second overtime. And you had to be proud of that.
Yeah, I certainly, the character of the kids, and you know, was certainly not to be questioned, and their heart. They just played their tails off, and you know, they deserve better. That's been the frustrating part. You know, from a coaching perspective, I'll have next year to get this thing back on board and win some of these games. I really feel bad for the seniors, you know, who have stood up against some obstacles pretty well and really have displayed all the intangibles that you want a program to display, you know, in terms of the character and the resiliency and the heart and the
perseverance and all the things that you talk about. And I think they demonstrated it tenfold last week and really, you know, made a tremendous go of it. And unfortunately, a whole different set of circumstances kind of interceded, and you know, we came out on the wrong end again. But it certainly wasn't a reflection on the kids' attitude or anything else.
You mentioned standing up in the fourth quarter, and nobody stood taller than Matt Carey, who just the two touchdowns and then the phenomenal fourth down catch that, you know, saved the game at that point early in the fourth quarter. He's been a lock all year, but I thought probably the best performance I've ever seen from him on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, he, you know, people thought semester he was the Ivy League Offensive Player of the Week. And you know, he's a kid who's not real big in terms of stature, but really has come up with a tremendous amount of big plays. And you know, when you start converting fourth and 22s, and we did it on two separate occasions, you know, that goes, you know, to show you the level of his skill and his desire to make plays. And you know, I just thought he played tremendously out there and really gave us a chance to get it into overtime. And you know, at that point, it's anybody's game, and unfortunately, we came up a little bit short.
You mentioned the fourth and longs. You had two of them in the fourth quarter. Same place, different place. How do you attack that from a coaching standpoint? I mean, there really can't be a play that you have designed to convert to that.
Yeah, there's no this is our fourth and 22 play. No, there were two different plays. You know, the first one, we were just trying to run a you know, kind of a seam away from the two deep coverage that we thought we'd get. And you know, Robert threw a perfect ball in between the corner on the outside and the safety on the inside, and Matt ran a great pattern, made a great catch. The second one was kind of a throwback seam where we started, you know, one way and tried to get the secondary to rotate over and kind of threw it back to the single receiver. And, you know, he got hit as he threw it, so rattled up a little bit more than it should have. And, you know, I thought Billy made, you know, tremendous body position and used his height, you know, effectively and came down with the ball.
Yeah, and Billy, in addition to that, a couple other big catches on that drive specifically, and he's really emerged as a good third receiver in your offense.
Yeah, no question. I mean, you know, one of the things that we've done well is distribute the ball to a lot of different people. You know, so we have tight ends who've caught it. We've had wide receivers who've caught it. We've got running backs who've caught it, and now we've got the third receiver in Billy, you know, who's been very productive. So when you can do that, it kind of eliminates people overstacking against Braden and Matt.
And you mentioned the great throw Irvin made several in fourth quarter and overtime. He's developed all year, and obviously you see the talent, but I thought you saw a leader out there on Saturday, and that had to be something that you guys can all look at and really look at, get excited for the future.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, realistically,
you know, he has a chance to be only the second sophomore in the history of Penn football to throw for 2,000 yards, which is quite an accomplishment. The only other guy we ever had do it was Gavin Hoffman, and, you know, really Gavin was a redshirt sophomore. You know, see, he had 2 years at Northwestern before he came here. So, you know, I think really speaks in volumes of the kid. Larry Wood, the quarterback coach, has done a nice job with him. He's got a really good demeanor. He's been in pressure situations, so I think this will bode well for him. You know, three consecutive weeks we've been in overtime. And, you know, he's a kid who has a tremendous upside. And he's really a kid that you can build your offense around. And, you know, you got him and you got Joe Sandberg and you have Braden all coming back. You know, that's a pretty good 1-2-3 punch to start off with.
Once again, there were struggles in the kicking game, and then Pete Stein got injured. What's his status, and who will be kicking, and how will that all play out this week?
Peter Stein, who we brought up from the lightweight team, was hopefully going to stabilize our kicking game. Unfortunately, you know, his first kick, we hit off the right upright from 22 yards out, which, you know, later on proved to be a huge play. He made his first PAT, but was roughed and fell, you know, pretty hard on his head. Started to get some tingling in his hand, so we had to take him out of the game, send him to the local hospital to get x-rayed. They're negative, but he still has stiff neck and undergoing some further tests. So I do not think he'll be available. Braden Lepistow, who took over for him, will be our primary kicker, and Derek Zock will be his backup.
And in overtime, it wasn't the kicking so much, hold snap. Was that just bad time for those to happen? Because those situations have been great all year.
Yeah, I mean, the first time the snap was perfect, and, you know, a holder that really hasn't been in that situation, you know, just dropped it. And the second time the snap was bad, it bounced back, and we couldn't put it down. And, you know, to the kid's credit, I mean, he's really played great. He's played tremendous, and, you know, he picked a bad time to have his first bad snap of the year, but, you know, that's the situation we found ourselves in. So, you know, that was Teddy Rosenbaum as the snapper, and he's just been tremendous all year, both short and long. So it was hard to fault any, you know, particular individual. It's, once again, it's just a situation that we just can't seem to get ourselves unstuck from and can't seem to find any consistency in.
We've talked about a lot of positives, but three straight overtime losses. How's the state of the team? How are they? Are the kids still juiced up, or it's got to be tough to be coming back from this?
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously we're testing their resiliency. You know, one of the things, you expend a tremendous amount of motion every time you play beyond the 60 minutes. And, you know, they've had to do it for three straight weeks, so I'm really concerned about how much emotion, you know, they actually have in reserve. But to our kids' credit, you know, they've practiced well this week. Our kids' credit, you know, they're somewhat upbeat and still enjoying practice, still enjoying each other, you know, still enjoying the game of football. You know, and I think that speaks, again, volumes, you know, for their own personal character that the kids have, and collectively we have as a team. So those are all good things, and, you know, as I told them, I said, you know, you're going to have to be ready to play this week because, you know, you're probably going to face, you know, the best talent in our league coming to town in Hartford. So if you're not ready to play, you know, things can get ugly.
And so the Crimson team, 7-1. I think you talk Harvard, you talk Clifton, Dawson, but this up and down both sides of the football, as you said, very talented. So just kind of give us a thumbnail of what they're going to bring to the table.
Yeah, I mean, you know, front and center is Clifton Dawson at running back, who's, you know, arguably been the best player in the league for the last 4 years, and should break all of Ed Marinero's records, rushing records in the league. So obviously that speaks to how good he's been, how durable, how consistent he's been. They got the quarterback back, the O'Hagan kid. You know, so now they have a dynamic they didn't have in the first 5 weeks. A kid is pretty athletic and can run and beat you with his feet. They have a wide receiver, a kid by the name of Mazda, who's one of the better wide receivers. So they kind of have the big three in place offensively. And then defensively, their down kicks collectively are as good as I've seen in a long time. I mean, they have 44 sacks coming into this game, which is probably double what anybody else in our league has. And it's been primarily done with the front four. And, you know, they have a little bit of depth, so those kids get a little bit of rest. But
they really play hard. They get after you, and it's a dynamic group. So, you know, we'll have our hands full. You know, we're going to have to play well on both sides, and you know, hopefully our kids can rally and, you know, can make some plays and kind of continue the growth that we've shown offensively against Princeton and hopefully stabilize the rushing efforts of Dawson.
Injury-wise, talked a little bit about it earlier, and I know a lot of guys cramped up. It was a very emotional, very long game last week. How are you physically?
Okay. You know, we got some bumps and bruises, and, you know, there's nothing catastrophic. We got a, you know, couple of skewers when Joe got knocked out and Nick got knocked out, and Sizzler and Sandberg in the same way. You know, that gets your attention. But, you know, both of them have practiced all week and seem to be okay. And, you know, considering it's week 9, you know, it's probably as good as we can expect to be.
Great. Thanks for the time.
Thank you.
This has been the Independence Blue Cross Al Bagnoli Show. Independence Blue Cross Al Bagnoli Show as we get you ready for the Quakers and the Crimson. We're just a couple minutes from kickoff. Elsewhere on the Avengers out-of-town scoreboard in the Ivy League today, Brown visiting Dartmouth. We've got Cornell at Columbia and Princeton at Yale. Obviously, Princeton at Yale. That is the marquee game today. But right now, it's going to be 4-4 Penn hosting 7-1 Harvard. We want to ask you to switch the streams to our game broadcast on the Penn Sports Network. And also check us out on WFIL. I want to thank our sponsors, Abner's Cheesesteak, CNA, Comcast Sportsnet, the Hilton Inn at Penn and Penn A Restaurant, Independence Blue Cross, Holiday Inn, Philadelphia Historic District, Pico Energy, Pepsi, the Philadelphia Inquirer and Daily News, Sprint Surf, United Healthcare, and World Cafe Y. This has been the Pepsi Pregame Show. We will catch you on the other side. You're listening to Quakers Football on the Penn Sports Network.
This is 2006 Penn Quaker Football. 2006 Penn Quaker Football is brought to you by Abner's Cheesesteaks at University City, CNH, Comcast Sportsnet, the Hilton Inn at Penn and Penn Restaurant, Independence Blue Cross, the Holiday Inn Philadelphia Historic District, Eco Energy, Pepsi, the Philadelphia Inquirer and Daily News, Sprint Term, United Healthcare, and World Cafe Live. Now for coverage of 2006 Penn Quaker Football, here's Matt Leon and Hench Murray.
And good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Franklin Field, a gorgeous November afternoon here in Philadelphia as the Penn Quakers play their final home game of the season as they welcome an excellent Harvard squad to town. Matt Leon along with Hench Murray, happy to be with you here on a gorgeous day in Philadelphia. Quakers have lost 3 straight overtime games, setting an NCAA record. We've talked about that. We're all aware of that. And it doesn't get any easier. If anything, it gets more difficult today, Hench, with probably the most talented team in the Ivy League. And while we have a moment here, we're going to pause for the playing of our national anthem, and then we'll get back to getting you ready for some football. Marching band performing our national anthem here at Franklin Field, and bring in Hench Murray and 3 straight overtime losses. I mean, the Quakers are literally 3 plays away from playing for an Ivy League title today. Instead, they're playing spoiler here. What do you think the biggest obstacle here? I would have to think it's mental today.
Well, I'm sure it's mental, and it would be interesting if you had 3 overtimes in a row and set a record and you won all 3 games. It's something different altogether if you lose all 3 and lose them in the way that Penn did, with the kicking game really leaving them short each time. It's clearly in their heads. Matt, we talked about it at the end of the Princeton game last week. You know, what do you do when you had a team that suffered that kind of loss and could be certainly either in the lead or tie with every other leader in the Ivy League for a chance to get a piece of that championship? And now, of course, they're just playing for pride. But the other possibility is that you just go out there and have some fun. I mean, these seniors have two more games. They know they're not going to get that ring. And maybe you put a couple new razzle-dazzle plays in, you play loose, and you just go out and have fun the way football, in some cases, was meant to be played. Now, in contrast to that, we know that Coach Bagnoli sometimes is not necessarily a fun guy. And he's all business and all work. And when I talked to him this week, my guess is that his mind was on business and trying to make sure the kids stayed focused. One thing we can say in all three of the games that went overtime, Matt, the kids played really hard. You can't fault their effort.
No, absolutely not, and they're going to need another great effort today because this is a very good Harvard team that's coming to Franklin Field here today, led by arguably and probably the player of the year in Clifton Dawson, and this kid is just a special running back. He needs just about 53 yards today to break the Ivy League all-time career rushing record set by a guy named Ed Marinaro, who was pretty good back in the day. So we're going to see a couple of special running backs, Dawson and Joe Sandberg, but I would think any defensive game plan, Hench, has to start with stopping Clifton Dawson, or at least containing him.
Well, I think contain is the right word. I'm not sure anybody's ever really stopped Clifton Dawson, and we've seen him for 3 years in a row. This guy is built low to the ground. He's not a real big kid. He's 210, but he's got moves that just make defenders look silly when they try to go one-on-one against him. So the Quakers are going to have their hands full trying to contain him. What they hope, I think, is that he doesn't break it loose.
Last year it was Liam O'Hagan that led Harvard to a 29-3 win up in Massachusetts. O'Hagan, who was kind of an unknown entity, I think, coming into that game as far as the big stage in the Ivy League was concerned, was really brilliant. Threw three touchdowns. He ran for a fourth. All three touchdowns went to his fullback, Kelly Widman, in a 29-3 game. And the last 2 years, Penn owes Harvard something, because the last 2 years, Harvard's really taken it to them. The 29-3 game last year, and then 2 years ago when the two teams were both undefeated in the Ivy League, Harvard really handed it to the Quakers 31-10 here at Franklin Field. So Penn's due for a little payback, I think.
Yeah, going back to the early 80s, it was really one of those home field advantages. Harvard had not won here until 2 years ago, since 1980. And inevitably, when Penn went up to play in Cambridge, they came out on the short end. So it was always that sort of every other year deal. But Harvard has put back-to-back wins together, and it's certainly for the Penn fans, it's Penn's year to see what they can do.
Quakers about as healthy as you could hope for Week 9. We will not see Peter Stein, the kicker, who came up from the sprint team last week and then hurt his neck after an extra point last week. So Braden Lepisto will be doing the kicking today, and Derek Dock will be backing him up. But we don't think, to go into the woes of the kicking game here at the University of Pennsylvania this season. Just needless to say that Lepisto kicked well in the second half last week when he got a chance. And, you hope those kicking woes are behind him, because I think we're all tired of it.
If any part of the kicking game could fall apart, it did last week. We had a bad kick. We had a bad snap. We had a bad hold. That's 3 for 3.
Yep.
And unfortunately, they didn't all occur on the same kick.
So Harvard wins the toss. They defer, so the Quakers will get the football first. Patrick Long, the kickoff specialist for Harvard, will be doing the honors. Quakers, we talk about the woes in the place-kicking game. Every other aspect of their special teams has really been brilliant this year. The kickoff return team has done a great job. Of course, Chris Wynn 2 weeks ago, the freshman, a 98-yard bolt of lightning in that loss to Brown for a touchdown. And like to see something get a quick start here. It'll be Sam Shepard and Chris Wynn back deep to return this kickoff. Quakers will be going left to right on your radio dial. Quakers wearing the home blue uniforms with the white pants. Harvard with the white jerseys, the red helmets, and the gold pants. I don't understand the gold at all. Harvard and Brown's uniforms on the road look like something out of the USFL. Just very odd combination. I think it will... You're the crimson.
Harvard's are a little more intellectual, as we were saying before the game. On their shoulder pad part of the jersey, they have their motto in Latin.
Nice.
Inspirational.
That comes in handy in the huddle, I'm sure.
Here's Patrick Long to get us started here on a gorgeous day. As you couldn't ask for better weather here in mid-November. And Long gets off a high end-over-end kick. It's going to be Chris Wynn backing up to the 4. Straight ahead, 5, 10, 15. Wynn out to the 18. Spins off the tackle. Gets out to the 20 before he's swarmed under by a load of Harvard players. And the Quakers will have it first and 10 at their own 20-yard line, going left to right on your radio dial. Quakers led by sophomore quarterback Robert Irvin, who just seems to get better every week. Last week, 365 yards, two touchdowns. He ran for a score. And I think more importantly, Hench, he really led them in the fourth quarter and the overtimes. You know, he brought them back from two scores down, brought them back from a touchdown down in the second overtime, and really played well. So here we go, first and 10. Irvin will work under center eye formation in the backfield. Joe Sandberg, the deep back, twin wides, out to the left. Now Sandberg comes in motion to the right to form the third wide receiver. Irvin straight back to throw. He's going to set up the screen on the left side. Sisler had it and dropped it at the 18-yard line. Had some room to run if he could make the catch, but could not haul it in. Second and 10.
Now that time they put Joe Sandberg in motion before the snap, coming out to the right side, tried to screen back to the left away from him. I think he was actually pretty lucky there. Eric Schultz, linebacker for Harvard, was right in the thick of that thing. And I think that may be why Robert Irvin had a little too much zip on that short screen pass. I don't think Sisler could handle it.
Second and 10 for the Quakers from their own 20. Three wide receivers set. Slot left. Sandberg alone in the backfield. Irvin under center. Left it to the slot man in motion, and on second down, handoff Sandberg, big hole up the middle, 25 out to the 27-yard line. Joe Sandberg with a good gain of seven sets the Quakers up with a third and three, and that is something that teams have not been able to do against Harvard, Hench, as they lead the nation in rush defense. Harvard allowing just 53 yards a game on the ground and 1.7 yards a carry.
Well, we know Princeton had a really good run defense going into last week's game, and Penn was able to shred them for some pretty good yardage. And, of course, Sandberg, the first back to go over 100 yards against them.
The third and three for Penn at their own 27. Irvin in the gun. Sandberg to his right. Three wide. Slot left. The slot man left to throw in motion. Irvin straight back to throw. Has time. Posted on the right side. Caught by Sandberg at the 29, but he is going to be tackled a yard short right where he made the reception. Good open field tackle by Eric Schultz for Harvard. Stops Sandberg a yard short of the first down, and it's going to be a quick three and out for the Quaker offense.
Well, I tell you, Eric Schultz, the linebacker, a sophomore, 5'11", 205, he's all over the field. He made all three plays in that offensive set for Penn.
Anthony Melillo in to punt it away. The junior averaging just under 37 yards a boot with a long of 49. Gets a good snap, and he gets one off the side of his foot, and it's going to hit at the 37 and take a Penn bounce down to the 30-yard line of Harvard, where it'll go out of bounds, and that's where Harvard will take over first and 10. So it wasn't real pretty, but it is effective, a 40-yard kick with no return. Harvard will have it first and 10 in our first look today at Clifton Dawson, the fine running back for Harvard. Mentioned Clifton Dawson talking off the air, has already been drafted by the Canadian Football League's Toronto Argonauts in the sixth round. I don't know what that means, but it's pretty interesting.
I can tell you what it means. It means he's a player.
First and 10, Harvard at their own 31. I formation backfield, wide receiver split. Junior quarterback Liam O'Hagan is back to throw, and he's under some pressure. He steps up. He's going to run to the 30, to the 35, out to the 37-yard line. O'Hagan, very valuable with his feet as well as with his arm, and he gains 7 yards on a broken play, and that'll bring up a second down and three.
Boy, that was just great coverage in the secondary for Penn. O'Hagan had nobody to throw to him. I think that's how he earned him last year, on that scramble. He's a really good and another athletic quarterback that we've seen so many of them this year.
Second and three for Harvard at their own 37. O'Hagan in the gun. Dawson to his right. Three wide. They go slot right. O'Hagan play action. Back to throw. He is firing it down. Deep to left side. Incomplete. Tyson Mogul was step for step with Corey Mazza, the fine senior wide receiver for Harvard. And that'll bring up a third and three. And next plays right into the strength of this Quaker defense is their cornerback play was a big question mark coming into the season, but boy, has it been phenomenal week in and week out, Hench.
I'll tell you, Tyson Morgel's technique is about as good as I've seen in many years here at Penn. He is just all over those receivers. Perfect coverage that time.
Third and three for Harvard. Four wide. Trips to the right. O'Hagan in the gun. Dawson to his right. They're going to hand it up to Dawson up the middle. He's not going to get a thing. He is wrapped up immediately. Anastasio, Tom Stone in there along with Michael Meredith. So the Quaker defense answers the bell as they force Harvard to go three and out on their first drive. And Penn will quickly get the ball back. No score here in the first quarter with just over 12 minutes to play. Good first series for that defense, then.
Big third down stop right there.
Greg Ambrosi standing back at his own 24 to return the punt of Matt Schindel, who does the place kicking and the punting duties. kind of a low snap, but Schindel's able to get it up and gets off a wobbly kick, gets it to 31, takes a Harvard bounce inside the 20. Ambrosia gets out of the way. It's going to roll down to the 10, to the 9, to the 8, to the 7. Keeps going down to the 6-yard line, and that's where Harvard will blow it dead. So that one wasn't pretty, but that one extremely effective for Harvard. That's a 53-yard punt unofficially with no return. 11:34 to play in the first quarter. Penn and Harvard are scoreless. You're listening to Quakers Football on the Penn Sports Network.
With Amtrak Share Fares, two's company and three's a deal, because for a limited time, groups of 3 to 6 can save 25 to 50% on Amtrak fares throughout the Northeast. The bigger the group, the bigger the savings. So gather the crowd and call 1-800-USA-RAIL or visit Amtrak.com today. And don't forget discount code H620. Not valid on Acela Express, Metroliner, Clockers, Downeaster, or Keystone train. 3-day advance purchase, blackouts, and other restrictions apply. Call 1-800-USA-RAIL or visit Amtrak.com for details.
11:34 to play, first quarter here at Franklin Field. Penn and Harvard are scoreless. And man, I just can't get over this weather. I mean, this is phenomenal.
If you didn't know better, you'd say it was September. You know, it's warm, it's sunny, there's a little breeze on the field. There actually is a fairly decent breeze, and it seems to be changing direction whimsically here. Can't tell. That time, again, I would have assumed that the wind was, that Harvard was punting into the wind, and Greg Ambrogi probably didn't have the proper depth in his positioning to take that punt, because he would have had to hustle up about 8 or 9 or 10 yards to make the catch in the air. He was unable to do it. And, of course, the ball bounced, and it took a Harvard bounce, and it kept bouncing. He had a couple notions of maybe to grab it and take off, but I think Wisely finally just got out of the road. And while they have lousy field position, at least they didn't create a turnover.
So it'll be first and 10 for Penn at their own 6. Robert Irvin will work under center, I formation backfield, twin wides to the left. This is the second possession of the game for the Quakers. They went 3 and out on their first. On first down, Robert Irvin hands off Sandberg, running right across the 5, bounces it outside to the 10, out to the 12, 13, give him a 14-yard line. Good burst by Sandberg around the corner for a gain of 8 yards. That'll bring up second and 2.
Well, that's a really nice inside pass move by Joe Sandberg. Again, coming into the short side of the field, going right, it looks like it's a play that's going to go off tackle, and he bounces it to the outside, gets to the corner and turns it up, and digs him out of the hole here a little bit.
Sandberg coming into the game, he's a buck 02 to reach 1,000 for the season. What a great year he's had. Second and 2 for Penn at their own 14. Irvin will work out of the gun with a back to either side, twin wise out to the left, left it still in the slot. Irvin lifts the leg, calls for the football. Irvin straight back to throw. He's got time, flips it on the right side to Sandberg, makes the catch at the 14-yard line, and he's going to be dropped right there for no gain. Looks like a face mask right in front of the official, but no call. It'll bring up third and 2.
Certainly the way his head snapped around, it looked like he grabbed something in the headgear. What they may be saying is that he was actually on the ground. I don't know how the rule works actually in that case.
After some of the calls we saw last week, I don't know how a lot of rules work.
Yeah.
So third down, they're actually going to say Sandberg lost the yard on that reception. Third and 3 at their own 13. Irvin will work under center with 3 wide. The wide man to the right, Billy May, coming in motion right to left. Sandberg alone in the backfield. Irvin will go straight back to throw. Has time across the middle, and it is incomplete. One at Brayden left is still in a crossing pattern at about the 17-yard line. A lot of contact, but no flag, and that will bring up fourth down, and the Quakers will be forced to punt.
Well, out of that 3-receiver set, at least that's what he gets to when Billy May goes in motion. They were trying to bring Brayden Lepisto coming across the middle that time. He got caught in all kinds of traffic there, got jostled around, and he was nowhere to be seen when the ball was thrown.
Stephen Williams, Andrew Berry back to return this kick for Harvard, and Malillo gets off a real good kick. It's going to drive Williams back to the 42, straight ahead to the 45, out to the 48-yard line. Flag comes flying in as Williams is tackled at the 48-yard line. Let's see about the penalty. You got to get the hold, but we'll see.
Block behind the back is something.
Yeah, against
Harvard. He's usually the kicking team, but the way things have been going for Penn, you never know.
So this will push Harvard back 10 yards for their second possession of the first quarter, which has no score with 10 minutes and 20 seconds.
Well,
So that'll push the football back to the 34-yard line, and that's where Harvard will take over first and 10. You have to have a first down in this one. Quakers have punted twice on a three and out, and Harvard's on three and out on their first drive. Liam O'Hagan, junior quarterback, working out of the gun, a four-wide set with Clifton Dawson to his right. Slot to either side. Four-man line for the Quaker defense. O'Hagan takes the snap, back to throw, under pressure, steps out of pressure, steps forward to the 35, out to the 37-yard line. That'll be a gain of about 3 yards. O'Hagan is very elusive, Henches. That was a, once again, that was a situation where the Quakers got good penetration and were in the backfield, but O'Hagan was able to turn that into a 3-yard gain instead of a negative play. So that'll bring up second down and 7 for the Harvard offense here at their own 37-yard line with 9:40 and counting to play in your first quarter. O'Hagan under center now with Dawson alone in the backfield. They got a wing to the left. It's Jason Miller. It's going to be a handoff to Dawson. Stretch play running left. Seam 40, 45 midfield. Dawson in the Penn territory. 40 still on the feet. 30, 25. Dawson to the 20, to the 15. Clifton Dawson inside the 10, down to the 8-yard line. And that is just Clifton Dawson being Clifton Dawson. Fluid, excellent balance, bouncing off tackle, takes it all the way down to the 8. And that's where Harvard will have it, first and goal.
Joey Brown, Jordan Manning finally tackle him at the 8-yard line. And that's some Clifton Dawson and some poor tackling by Penn, because they had him bottled up on the sideline a couple of times and the red and blue guys unable to take him down.
First and goal, Harvard at the 8. O'Hagan in the gun, Dawson to his right, twin wides to the right, and O'Hagan takes the snap, and he's going to run, running right. He gets to the 7-yard line before he is ripped down by Tom Stone. Good penetration and pursuit that time by the Quaker front seven, and that'll bring up second down and goal.
That's just the old single wing play where the O'Hagan lines up as the tailback in that shotgun look. It's a direct snap to him, and he goes behind Clifton Dawson's kickout block, but the left side of that Penn defense did a terrific job staying on their feet and closing it down.
Second and goal, Harvard at the 6. O'Hagan in the gun, Dawson to his right, twin wides to the left. O'Hagan takes the snap, play action, back to throw, firing it into the end zone, touchdown. Jason Miller with his first touchdown catch of the season. A 6-yard strike from O'Hagan, and it's 6-0 Harvard.
Well, they just snuck Jason Miller as a second receiver out there into the right flat. He was uncovered. Somebody missed an assignment there for Penn. He was wide open, and it's just an easy throw and catch for O'Hagan to Miller.
Matt Schindel in to attempt the extra point for Harvard. He is 29 of 30 on PATs this season. Out of the hold of Clem McDavid. Good snap, good hold. The kick is up, and the kick is good. 8:26 to play, first quarter. 7-0 Harvard. You're listening to Quakers football on the Penn Sports Network.
Penn men's basketball season tickets are on sale now. Purchasing season tickets is the only way to ensure that you'll have the best seats in the historic Palestra as the Red and Blue make their run for a third straight Ivy League title. Purchase your tickets by going online at PennAthletics.com. Fans, if you're looking for a cheesesteak in University City, there's no better place than Abner's Cheesesteaks, a neighborhood tradition. Located at 38th and Chestnut Street and AbnersCheesesteaks.com. Abner's provides a full menu of sandwiches and also is available to cater your next event. For more information, visit their website at www.abnerscheesesteaks.com. Abner's Cheesesteaks, a proud sponsor of Penn Football.
Back here at Franklin Field, Harvard strikes first. A 6-yard touchdown strike from Liam O'Hagan to Jason Miller, the backup tight end. That makes it 6-0. Harvard, the extra point makes it 7-0. And that's where we stand with 8:26 to play here in the first quarter. That touchdown set up by a 50-yard run by Clifton Dawson, and he is right on the precipice of becoming the all-time leading rusher in the history of the Ivy League. As soon as he breaks that record officially, we'll bring that information to you. Dan Shepard, Chris Wynn back to return the kick for the Quakers, standing back at their own 5-yard line. Patrick Long approaches the football, gets off a line drive, wobbly kick. It's going to hit at the 15. It's going to go right out of bounds. Just an awful kick that time by Long. Well, when you've got one job and it's the kickoff, you can't be squirting it out of bounds like that, Hitch.
That was pretty bad effort. And I was about to say when he had his opening kickoff, he hung that thing way up there. which really resulted in a pretty poor return by Wynn, because the coverage team got down there and really had a chance to break up the wall before Wynn had a chance to get started, because that thing hung up there for so long. But this was in stark contrast. He hooked it, and out it went. So the Quakers get pretty good field position here at the 35.
Their best starting field position of the day, first and 10 at their own 35. Robert Irvin under center, wide receiver split, double tight end set. Josh Koontz, the second tight end, a wing to the left. Sandberg alone in the backfield. On first down, Irvin hands it off to Sandberg, cuts it back to the right to the line of scrimmage, pushes the pile forward for a couple out to the 37, and it'll bring up second down and 8. Mentioned Harvard so good against the run. They also lead the nation in sacks and tackles for loss. They average more than 5 sacks a game and 9 1/3 tackles for loss a contest. Most of that damage done by their front four. They have 4 different defensive linemen, Hench, with double-figure tackle for losses this season. Outstanding performance from that group all season for the Crimson. Second and 8 for the Quakers at their own 37. Irvin in the gun, 3 wide, slot left. Irvin, back to throw, rolling to his left, fires on the run, in and out of the hands of Braden Lepisto at the 43-yard line, and it'll bring up third down and 8.
Simple sprint left action in the backfield, and Braden Lepisto goes down about 8 yards, just enough for the first down. That ball's thrown behind him, though. I mean, it's the kind we've seen Braden make the catch before, but he had to turn all the way around to make the catch and was unable to hang on.
So third and 8, Quakers still looking for that first down of the day. Irvin in the gun, a 4 wide set, slot to either side. Sandberg to the left of Irvin, and Irvin is back to throw, firing down the middle. Complete, Matt Carey, 48-yard line to midfield, first down, 10, a gain of 11 yards. Matt Carey, the Ivy League Offensive Player of the Week after that performance last week against Princeton when he went 5 for 114 and 2 touchdowns. And even the numbers, as impressive as they are, don't tell the story as far as the quality and clutchness of the catches he had last week.
Unbelievable last week.
First and 10 Quakers at their own 49, trailing Harvard 7-0 with 7:07 to play here in the first quarter. Irvin under center, wide receiver split, I formation backfield. It's going to be handled to Sifler right up the gut into Harvard territory, down to the 45-yard line. So a quick fullback hitter gains 6 yards. And Nick Sifler is becoming more and more a factor as far as touching the football hands. He's been a great lead blocker all season, but they're trying to give him the rock.
I think all they're trying to do there is get the ball in his hands real quickly and try to maybe sneak him across the line of scrimmage before Harvard even has a chance to realize they've given him the ball, and that's certainly what happened on that carry.
Second and 4 for the Quakers. Play action, Irvin rolling, firing, complete. Toots to the 40, 35, Toots to the 30, Toots to the 26-yard line before he pushed out of bounds, and that was a very well-executed play. A little play action bootleg for Irvin, and he just dumped it to Toots, who had room to run down the left side, all the way down to the 25-yard line. It's a gain of 19 and another first down for Penn.
Well, it had Toots and Chris Mizell on the right side. Toots is in the wing look that time, and he goes in motion across the formation. And he's going to be a lead blocker, actually, what it looks like anyway, to the defense on that bootleg, but he keeps going, misses the block, heads out into the flat. Nobody picked him up for Harvard, so he was wide open on that one.
First and 10, 10 at the Harvard 25. Irvin in the gun, a 3 wide set. They go slot right. Sandberg to the left of Irvin in the backfield. Robert Irvin takes the snap. Away, handoff, Sandberg up the middle to the 25. Sandberg down to the 20 before he stood up and pushed backwards. But that's another gain of 5 yards, and the Quakers doing what no one's been able to do against Harvard, and that's run the football a little bit to keep the Crimson pass rush on it, and it'll bring up 2nd and 5. Say every weekend, but boy, Joe Sandberg is special.
Well, you're right. We have said it every week, and he's just got a real knack of finding that seam in there and just finding a way to get into it, and then once he gets into it, he's just got great vision and great niftiness.
2nd and 5 for the Quakers at the Harvard 20. I formation backfield. Irvin under center, twin wides to the right. On 2nd down, Irvin, handoff, Sandberg, left side across the 20, stumbles forward to the 18, pushes forward to the 15-yard line, and Joe Sandberg is going to be very close to a 1st down.
And they're going back to that offensive set that they used a little bit last week against Princeton, where they're in the eye and they're taking advantage of Nick Sisler, who was really one of the best blocking fullbacks we've had here in a long while. He makes the kick out that time and just gives enough of a crease there for Joe Sandberg to get up in there. Sandberg, as you said, loses his balance, but somehow he manages to stay on his feet and pick up the 1st down.
I would love to see if they were able to keep track of this, the amount of yards he's rushed for this season after he's lost his balance or he's coming off that first hit, because it's phenomenal, his field of vision and his balance. First and 10 Quakers at the Harvard 15. Irvin under center. Gotta give it to Sandberg, running right, trying to turn the corner. Sandberg to the 15, to the 10, to the 5. So Sandberg in, touchdown Quakers! 15 yards, Joe Sandberg with a burst around right end of it, 7-6.
Well, Harvard, like almost every other team that Penn has faced this year, misjudged Joe Sandberg's speed that time. It looks like he's gone off tackle, and he bounces it outside. He had plenty of room. The play set up on the left hash. He came all the way around to the right pylon, which showed really typical Joe Sandberg speed, and they just misjudged it.
Eighth touchdown of the season for Sandberg as he continues to march towards the 1,000-yard mark. Braden left it so into attempt the extra point out of the hole to Scotty Williams. Good snap, good hold. Kick is up. The kick is good, and with 4:46 to play in the first quarter, we're all knotted at 7. You're listening to Quakers Football on the Penn Sports Network.
Red and blue pride, that's what every fan of Penn Athletics feels every day. And now you can get your very own red and blue pride merchandise at the brand new online store at PennAthletics.com. Penn Athletics' new store features logo apparel from brand names such as Adidas, Antigua, Cutter and Buck, and Russell Athletics. And it's the best way for a diehard Quaker fan to show their true passion. Show your red and blue pride today by purchasing officially licensed gear from PennAthletics.com.
.446 to play in the first quarter. We're tied at 7, and we were talking off the air, Hedge. Opponents scored first a lot against the Quakers. Excellent response this time by Penn. They come right back and answer Harvard's touchdown, but Quakers have found themselves playing from behind for sure every week of this losing streak. They've had to dig themselves out of a hole.
Well, we should also point out that Scotty Williams is holding for Braden Lepisto, and last week, of course, it was Matt Reiner who was holding because they had two kickers, and they were trying both of them. And Scotty was holding for Peter Stein, but this week maybe we've got the right combination out there with Braden and Scotty.
Quakers go 8 plays, 65 yards, and 3:35. Sandberg with the touchdown, left it so to kick off. He gets off a high end over end, good kick, and it comes down to Neil Sherlock at the 5. To the 10, Sherlock, middle of the field, he stops himself flat-footed, and he's going to be bowled over at the 12-yard line. So Sherlock, as soon as he stopped his momentum, he was dead in the water, and the Quakers swarmed to the football, and Harvard is buried back at their own, call it the 14-yard line. First and 10 for the Crimson, tied at 7 with 4:35 left in the first quarter. As soon as he stopped there, and she knew he was in trouble. He wasn't starting that engine again.
But that was a great kick by Braden. He got it up high and deep down to about the 2 or 3-yard line, and again, good work by the coverage team for the Quakers.
First and 10, Harvard at their own 14. O'Hagan in the gun and a 3-wide set. Slot left, O'Hagan play action, rolling to his right. Stops, fires on the run. He's got a man, and it's dropped by Corey Mazza at the 25-yard line. Heard Joey Brown's footsteps coming in behind him. Mazza, who has caught a touchdown pass in 7 straight games for Harvard, can't make that catch. It's second and 10.
Just a roll to the right. Mazza went down about 12 yards, made the cut at the timing play. Joey Brown, maybe a half a step slow getting there, but delivered a pretty good pop just as the ball got there, and Mazza unable to hold on to it.
Second and 10, Harvard at their own 14. O'Hagan in the gun. Clifton Dawson to his right. 4 wide, trips to the right, and O'Hagan hands it off to Dawson right up the middle. Not much. Pushes forward after the 16-yard line. The Quaker, front 4, was right there with some help from Corey Geddon, Tom Stone. And that's going to bring up 3rd down and 8. For Harvard at their own 16-yard line. Make it to 17, 3rd and 7. O'Hagan in the gun, Dawson to his left. 4 wides in the game. They go slot to either side. O'Hagan takes the snap straight back to throw. Blitz is on, and Scotty Williams gets to him, knocks the pass away. And just as O'Hagan got it away, Scotty Williams got a hand on it, intended for Corey Mazza, but the deflection on 3rd down means a punt for the Crimson. And the Quaker defense stands up strong that series, a 3-and-out for Harvard. The Quakers should get pretty good field position out of it.
Scotty comes through unblocked that time, does a great job of getting his hands up and getting right in O'Hagan's face. And let's give some credit to that secondary for Penn. They were in a 6 defensive back set that time. That's why they could afford to let Scotty take a run at it.
Harvard, a very interesting punt formation. They have 3 guys wide to the left and 3 up men in front of Matt Schindel, the punter, and he gets off a good spiral, tight spiral, pushes Ambrosi back to the 35. He breaks one tackle, pushes forward to the 38-yard line before he's wrapped up and tackled right there. And that's where the Quakers will take over first and 10. Daniel Tanner, senior safety for Harvard, making that punt return tackle. Never seen a punt formation like that, Hench. Is that just to kind of throw teams off?
Well, they've got three guys. In this case, it was to the left side, split probably 4 yards apart. And for one, you have to go out and cover those guys no matter what, because they're potential threats to rush down under the punt. So they've really spread out your coverage team, too. And on the first time they tried it, Penn tried to go for it, because the one downside of that is they give you a much smaller area that you've got to rush from. So, I don't know. Just a change-up, I guess.
First and 10, Penn at their own 38. Irvin under center, wide receiver split, offset eye in the backfield, play action, Irvin back to throw. He is firing a deep, he's got a man, it's single up, and throw, and it's overthrown at the 20-yard line. Lefistoe had a step on the quarterback, Stephen Williams, but Irvin let him just a bit too much. It's incomplete, second and 10.
It looked like as he got into the coverage around the middle of the field there, Braden kind of slowed up noticeably and then tried to turn it back on, and that may explain why the ball was overthrown.
One thing I've noticed here early on, and we threw props to the Harvard front four, Quaker offensive line so far has controlled the line of scrimmage in this one. Second and 10 for Penn at their own 38. Three wide, slot left. Irvin in the gun, takes the snap. Irvin back to throw. Fires on the left side. Completes to Matt Reiner at the 38. Makes a move to the 40, out to the 43-yard line. Another fancy there. Just a little pitch and catch. And Reiner takes the football out to the 43-yard line. And it's a gain of 5, and it'll bring up a third down and 5. Reiner, one of these young wide receivers. I know the Quaker coaching staff is quite high on the sophomore. That's his fourth catch of the season.
I tell you, they don't grow these wide receivers all that big, though. Reiner, another one, 6'1", 165 pounds.
Third and 5 for Penn at their own 43. Irvin under center, wide receiver split. I formation in the backfield, Fistler in motion. Irvin play action, back to throw, firing down the middle, complete. Matt Carey on the left sideline to the 30, out of bounds at the 26-yard line. So a big third down conversion for the Quaker offense, which is clicking here in the second half of the first quarter.
This is a great pattern run that time by Terry, who starts down the field, gives the head fake toward the post, and just freezes the safety for Harvard, and then he makes the move to the outside. The timing between him and Robert Irvin was perfect. As he made the outside move, the ball was on its way. And that's just a premier execution.
First and 10, Penn at the 27 of Harvard. We're tied at 7, but the Quakers threatening. Irvin will work out a shotgun, a back to either side. Twin wides to the right. Irvin lifts the leg, and he calls for the football. Irvin is back to throw. He's got time. He throws it on the right side. Complete to Sisler. 25, 20. Sisler bangs his way inside the 20 down to the 17-yard line. He rolled over Williams, the cornerback, for a couple of extra yards. He's going to be close to the first down.
Well, you said it earlier in the game and also commented against Princeton that Sisler is really adding a new dimension to this offense, because they have not had upbacks who were really decent at catching the football. And he has become a threat as a third receiver that time out in a flood pattern. He was open. Irvin got him the ball, and Sisler put it away and took it down the field.
First and 10-10. They didn't need to get that first down on that reception. At the 17, it's going to be another hand up to Sisler up the middle inside the 15. Battles his way down to the 12-yard line, maybe the 11. That's a gain of 7. And it is second down and 3. And I'm sure Harvard did not expect to hit the ball shoved down their throat on the ground like this, because no one's done it to them this year. But the Quakers dominating in the running game early on.
Well, again, Sisler has not really been a running threat much this season. He was banged up and missed a couple of games there in the middle of the season, too. But that time it's just a straight handoff, and I think they're catching, as you said, Harvard by surprise.
Second and 4 at the 11 of Harvard. Tied at 7, Irvin under center. Irvin gives it off to Sandberg, running right with room inside the 10. Sandberg to the 5, Sandberg towards the end zone, touchdown! There's a flag on the play. I think that might be a face mask. Let's wait and see. Sandberg into the end zone.
Again, another just masterful effort by Joe Sandberg. Starting off tackle, bounces it outside, puts a little speed on. And I think you got the right call. There is a face mask. But we'll take that touchdown.
It is a face mask against Harvard. They pointed to Penn, but it's a face mask against Harvard. So it's another touchdown for Joe Sandberg, his second of the day. This one from 11 yards, and it's 13-7, Penn with 1:14 to play in the first quarter. Braden Lefistoe to kick the extra point out of the hold of Scotty Williams. for the extra point. Good snap, good hole. Lefkoe's kick has the distance, and it's good. 1:14 to play, first quarter, 14-7 Quakers. You're listening to Quakers football on the Penn Sports Network.
Fans, if you're looking for a cheesesteak in University City, there's no better place than Abner's Cheesesteaks, a neighborhood tradition, located at 38th and Chestnut Street, and abnerscheesesteaks.com. Abner's provides a full menu of sandwiches and also is available to cater your next event. For more information, visit their website at www.abnerscheesesteaks.com. Abner's Cheesesteaks, a proud sponsor of Penn Football.
14-7, Penn leading Harvard here with 1:14 to play in the first quarter. The Quaker offense, after three and outs on their first two possessions, has exploded with two long touchdown drives, one covering 80 yards, the other covering 63. Both of them end with Joe Sandberg touchdown runs of 15 and then that one of 11 yards. Joe Sandberg having a phenomenal first quarter to go along with a phenomenal season. And we sit there in the break bench. After three straight devastating losses, it's only natural to wonder about how emotional, how much will be left in the tank with the Quakers. And any of those questions, I think, have been answered with authority. Braden Lefkoe to kick off. Lefkoe gets off a high end-over-end butt short kick. It's going to be taken by Charles Backel at the 5. Straight ahead to the 10, 15, out to the 20. Fumbles the football. It's loose, and the Quakers have it at the 22-yard line. Backel fumbled the football. I didn't see who made the hit, but the Quakers swarm to the football. Chris Ashley making the recovery, and the Quakers are in business. First and 10 at the Harvard 22.
Wow, what a turnaround right there. Again, a decent kick by Braden Lefkoe down to the 5-yard line. The ball came out through about the 20, and he just got stacked up right there. The ball came clean out. You could see the fumble really easily. And there it laid on the ground, and Chris Ashley alertly falls on it for Penn. Big break right there.
So the Quakers will take over. That fumble was forced. Looks like Jake Lucco, yep, a freshman linebacker with the hit.
He got his helmet on the football.
First and 10 at the Harvard 22 after the fumble. Quakers already leading 14-7. Irvin under center. Three wides in the game. Slot right. Irvin play action. Back to throw. Firing on the right side into the end zone. Incomplete. Right at the goal line. Matt Carey was the intended receiver. It was Steve Williams knocking it away. That's a cornerback that's gotten a lot of action here in this first quarter. It'll be second and 10.
He had a couple of shots there. It looked like he had Dan Coleman short running the post. And he also had Matt Carey deep. But that was well covered. If you're a Penn fan, you might say maybe interference, but I think we have to just say it was good defense.
Second down and 10. We've got 41 seconds left in the first quarter. Penn leading 14-7, looking for more. Sandberg alone in the backfield. Three wide receivers, slot right. Robert Irvin's under center. Left to the slot man in motion, right to left. Hand off to Joe Sandberg. Cuts it inside the 20. Down to the 19-yard line. A gain of about 3. That'll bring up 3rd and 7.
You know, that first down play that didn't connect, of course, it was inches away probably from being a Matt Carey touchdown. I like that call right after the fumble. Just try to see if you can go right for it.
20 seconds. Quakers do not have to run a play as the 25-second clock is yet to start. Let's see if the Quakers indeed choose to run one more play here in the first quarter or let the clock tick down. Looks like they're going to go for it. Four wides in the game. Trips to the right. Irvin in the gun. Irvin takes the snap, rolling to his right, firing on the run. Matt Carey wide open at the 12, cuts inside, gets stopped right at the 12-yard line. He's close to the first down. He tried to give a little ground in order to definitely make it for the first, and he's going to be right at the 6.
I think for a change he got a pretty good spot that time because as he made the reception, he was at the 12. As you said, he gave a little bit of ground, ended up being tackled well short of the 12-yard line, but the line judge spotted it at the 12. I think they've already signaled the first down, so.
And we've got a quarter in the books, and an entertaining quarter it's been. The Quakers lead Harvard 14-7 after one. They're listening to Quakers football on the Penn Sports Network.
Penn men's basketball season tickets are on sale now. Purchasing season tickets is the only way to ensure that you'll have the best seat in the historic Palestra as the Red and Blue make their run for a third straight Ivy League title. Purchase your tickets by going online at PennAthletics.com.
Make the most of your time when you travel on Estela Express for Business and get everything you need to work or relax, like conference tables for holding meetings, a quiet car to catch up on sleep, outlets to recharge your laptops and cell phones, personal attention from Estela staff, and a cafe car so you can grab a bite to eat. To book your next business trip on Estela Express, call 1-800-USA-RAIL or visit Amtrak.com.
Back here at Franklin Field, Quakers will have it first and 10 at the Harvard 12-yard line, already leading 14-7, and it is indeed a first down, that reception to Matt Carrick. And the two things you take away from the first quarter, Hedge, aside from the fact that the Quakers have the early lead here, the running game of the Quakers against the leading rush defense in the country, and the performance of the offensive line in the passing game against a ferocious front four coming into this one, they have really stifled that front four of Harvard in this first quarter.
And they've done it two ways. They've used a lot of rollout action to try to run away from that rush, and also they've used a lot of play action to give Robert Irvin a little bit more time. And let's also, as you just said, credit that offensive line for doing a pretty good job of maintaining control.
So we're about to start the second quarter. Quakers two touchdowns on Joe Sandberg touchdown runs. He's been brilliant here so far. Robert Irvin has been very steady at quarterback. A couple of big third down conversions, including one on the last play of the first quarter. So here we go, first and 10-10 at the Harvard 12. Quakers moving right to left on your radio dial. Quakers looking to build on a 14-7 lead. Irvin is under center, wide receiver split. Sandberg alone in the backfield, and Irvin's back to throw. They're setting up the screen on the right side. Sandberg makes the catch at the 15, and he is swarmed under right there as Harvard sniffed that one out immediately. Glenn Doris, the middle linebacker, the first guy there. He's going to drop Sandberg for a loss of three, and it'll bring up second down and 13.
They've hit that identical play a couple of times for touchdowns this year. They go on the right hash, looking to the left, and Sandberg tries to sneak out right behind the screen. That time, had he had it developed maybe a half a count sooner and he got his hands on the football, he might have been able to step in behind that lead block, but it wasn't to be, and he got nailed for a two-yard loss.
Doris, a great job reading that for Harvard. So second down, 12. Irvin under center. Real delay handoff to Sandberg, and he swarmed under back at the 20-yard line. That's going to be a loss of five. So this portion of the drive not going according to script, as the Quakers have lost 2.5 and then 5 yards. Now they're outside the 20, and it's going to be third down and 17.
Well, we may have spoken too soon about that Harvard defense and what they were giving up, because, as you said, they've been swarming those last two snaps.
That was about as delayed a delay handoff as you can have. Not only did Irvin go back in the pocket, but he actually even took a step to his left before he finally gave it off. So third down and call it 18 outside the 20. Irvin under center, three wide, slot left. Irvin pump fake, looking, floating one into the end zone. Once Matt Carey, and he throws it into the track. About 10 yards outside the end zone, and it'll bring up fourth down. And that'll bring out the field goal unit.
So that defensive stand by Harvard, pretty effective, forcing Penn from the 12-yard line back to the past the 20-yard line and making this field goal attempt a little more challenging.
It'll be a 37-yard attempt, not quite down the middle, shaded to the right, but a good lie for Lefisto, who banged a 38-yarder last week against Princeton. Scotty Williams to hold. Good snap, good hold. Kick has the distance. And the kick is good with 13:31 to play here in the second quarter. Penn leads Harvard 17-7. You're listening to Quakers Football on the Penn Sports Network.
Red and blue pride, that's what every fan of Penn Athletics feels every day. And now you can get your very own red and blue pride merchandise at the brand new online store at PennAthletics.com. Penn Athletics' new store features logo apparel from brand names such as Adidas, Antigua, Cutter & Buck, and Russell Athletic. And it's the best way for a diehard Quaker fan to show their true passion. Show your red and blue pride today by purchasing officially licensed gear from PennAthletics.com.
13:30 to play, first half. It's 17-7-10, and I didn't want to say it on the air before that drive completed. But against Brown and against Yale specifically, the Quakers had leads in both games and got big plays in the kicking game or on defense to give it a short field right after that and a chance to make it a two-possession game and really get some confidence. Both cases, they missed field goals, missed short field goals. You could feel the air go out of the balloon. This time, Lefisto is able to salvage 3 points out of that drive, and it just really gives you a whole different feel to everything.
Well, again, it may be the combination that Scotty Williams was holding for him, but you know, Braden seems to have real confidence. He's got a very interesting kicking style. It's a short sort of chip kick at it. Doesn't really follow through, but he gets a lot of force into it.
Chang Ho and Neil Sherlock about to return the kick, and it's Sherlock taking it at the 10 with a head of steam to the 15 out to the 20, 24-yard line before he's pushed back by Joey Brown and Chris Ashley. It was Ashley that recovered the fumble on the last kickoff return for Harvard, so Harvard will have it first and 10 at their own 24. It's been a deluge the last 10 minutes of football action. The Quakers have scored 17 points, and in the first quarter, the Quakers held the football for 10 minutes and 17 seconds. Compared to just 4:43 for Harvard. Harvard's one touchdown came after a long run by Clifton Dawson, but the Quaker defense really take away that one play, and they have played very well here in this first half. The first and 10 for Harvard at their own 24. Liam O'Hagan in the gun, a back to either side. Three wide, they go slot right. Dawson to the left of O'Hagan, and O'Hagan is back to throw. Rolling to his right, under pressure, fires on the run. It is complete after the 34-yard line. Out of bounds is Matt Lagacy at the 37. That's going to be a gain of 13 yards and a first down. Looks like O'Hagan's first read was clogged up, and Lagacy was more of a dump-off option, but it's enough for the first.
Well, Brent Erdboom looked like he was trying to play a man-to-man, and then seemed also a little bit to get distracted, lose his concentration, and he let the Lagacy get out there in the flat and become wide open for the reception.
First and 10, Harvard. At their own 37, O'Hagan in the gun, three wide, slot left, O'Hagan back to throw. Being pressured, fires on the right side, just dumps it off to Clifton Dawson, and he's going to be dumped for no gain. Michael Marinelli read that play brilliantly and didn't let Dawson get any kind of momentum. Give him one on forward progress, it's going to be second and 9.
He was well covered that whole time. Dawson trying to sneak out into the right flat after the play action fake, and really, a nice job by Marinelli, and he was finished off by Joe Anastasia right at the sideline. So, good defense by 10.
Second and 9, Harvard, at their own 38. O'Hagan under center this time. Twin wide to the left. Dawson alone in the backfield. Wing to the right. Going to be a delay hand up to Dawson up the middle to the 40. After the 44-yard line, good running by Clifton Dawson, picking and choosing his way. The gain of about 6 yards, and it's going to bring up 3rd and 3, and if my math is correct, that Zach Carey Clifton Dawson has become the all-time leading rusher in the history of the Ivy League. So I'm sure we'll get the official word on that. It was kind of a foregone conclusion that he was going to get that record today, needing only 53 yards. But Clifton Dawson, that's saying something when you think of all the greats that have come through this league. 3rd and 3, Harvard, at their own 44. O'Hagan under center, twin wide to the left, Dawson alone in the backfield, O'Hagan back to throw, firing on the right side, it's complete into Penn territory, down to the 46-yard line, Matt Sparbacco, the tight end, makes the catch. That's a gain of 10 yards, and it's enough for a first down.
Yeah, Pat Kimmerer in good position that time, again, chasing Sparbacco right to the sideline. Looked like he almost had a hand in front to get a piece of the football, but it just never happened, so it's another first down for Harvard.
First and 10, Crimson at the Penn 46-yard line, 11:34 to play. First half, Quakers leading 17-7, but Harvard on the move. And there's a question, one of the official runs in, and it looks like he turned the football over. Don't really know that that was necessary, but first and 10, Harvard. O'Hagan in the gun, three wide, slot left. O'Hagan back to throw. Has time, firing down the middle, and it's tipped, and it's intercepted. Intercepted by Pat Kimmerer, running up the left side. 30, 35, out of bounds at the 40. It was Tyson Noggle that made the play on the football, and he tipped it right into the hands of Kimmerer, who makes the interception. It's the second turnover of the day for Harvard, and the Quakers are in business, first and 10 of their own 40.
It's just the way you script it in practice. You do that tip drill. Tyson Margle, who we've already said has had a great game in the first quarter, in excellent position again. Just gets a hand in there to tip that ball up, and Pat Kimmerer alertly on the spot, picks it out of the air, brings it back along the left sideline in front of the Penn bench after the 40-yard line. So a second big turnover here for Penn.
And here's Brian Walker for the first time in 3 weeks. We see the Quakers backup quarterback. He comes in with Penn leading by 10, first and 10 at their own 40. Three wide, slot right. Walker in the gun with Sisler to his right. And Walker, quarterback draw right up the middle. 40 after the 41, maybe the 42-yard line. Not much happening on that play. It'll bring up second down and a long 8.
Well, Harvard adjusted the defense right before the ball was snapped. And it's no secret to anybody that when Brian Walker gets in the game, they're probably going to use that tailback run thing, which is exactly what he did. And Harvard made whatever adjustment was necessary and shut them down that time.
Walker, 88 yards rushing on the season on 8 carries. He's completing 38% of his passes. Second and 9, 10 at their own 41. Walker in shotgun, and we've got movement up front. Let's see if the Quakers moved or if Harvard jumped.
I think we got a false start here.
Looks like it will indeed be against the Quakers. His pen is already moving back. Marco Grisan, the Quakers' senior left tackle, a little anxious on that play, so that'll move the football back to the 36th of pen. 10:36 to play in the first half. 17-7 Quakers, a leading Harvard, and they have the football after a turnover. Brian Walker in shotgun, three wide, slot right. Walker takes the snap, rolling to his left, has a lane down the left sideline to the 40, 45. Walker out of bounds at the 49, call him the 48-yard line. Brian Walker with a gain of 11 yards on that time. And that's going to bring up a third and two for Penn.
You know, Harvard made a similar adjustment that time with the shotgun look and Walker in the tailback position, and Penn went short side with it. And Brian makes a nice cut into a running lane, then gets out to the sideline and turns it up the field. So Penn has a reasonable chance here with third and three.
Robert Urban back in the game at quarterback. I formation backfield, double tight end set, wing to the right. And it's going to be a handoff to Sisler right up the middle. He runs into his own man, and he's going to be dropped in the backfield for a loss of 2 yards.
Well, they tried to go to the Sisler bank maybe one too many times. They'd surprised Harvard on the first two carries by Nick just sneaking up in there. That time there was a wall of white Harvard defenders, and he went nowhere.
So the Quakers cannot convert the turnover, the Kiminer interception, into points. And now they will try to pin Harvard back deep. Steven Williams back deep to return the Anthony Melillo punt. Good snap back to Melillo. That punt was almost blocked, but Melillo gets it off a high wobbly spiral. Williams staying away from it. It hits at the 26, and the Quakers will down it right there. Michael Marinelli makes the catch on one bounce. And that's where Harvard will take over first and 10 with 9:42 to play in your first half. It is 17-7, Penn leading Harvard. You're listening to Quakers football on the Penn Sports Network.
With Amtrak Share Fares, two's company and three's the deal, because for a limited time, groups of 3 to 6 can save 25 to 50% on Amtrak fares throughout the Northeast. The bigger the group, the bigger the savings. So gather the crowd and call 1-800-USA-RAIL or visit Amtrak.com today. And don't forget discount code H620. Not valid on Acela Express, Metroliner, Clockers, Downeaster, or Keystone trains. 3-day advance purchase, blackout, and other restrictions apply. Call 1-800-USA-RAIL or visit Amtrak.com for details.
This is Philadelphia's Christian Radio, 560 WFIL.
9:42 to play in the first half. Penn leading Harvard, 17-7. Harvard will have the football, first and 10 after a punt at their own 27-yard line. Sure to stick around at halftime. Our guest on the United Healthcare halftime report will be former Quakers tight end Matt Michaleski. Had a chance to talk with Matt earlier this week, who played a part in the movie Invincible, which was shot right here at Franklin Field. So you'll want to find out about that. Stick around for halftime. Our guest will be former Quakers tight end Matt Michaleski. Quakers lead is 17-7, and so far, Hench, this has been an A performance from the Penn team.
Yeah, the two turnovers, of course, have been something that psychologically is very helpful to you. I mean, that tip drill that we just had, the disappointing part is that they weren't able to capitalize on it anymore and, you know, put a couple first downs together, possibly get a score. But they have Harvard at this point recognizing that they are in a football game. I think Harvard had that pretty easy score when Dawson ripped off the 50-yarder, and they kind of punched it in for an easy touchdown. And I think it would have been real possible that on that Harvard sideline they're saying, well, Penn has folded the pitch. You know, they're not going to come out to play. And it's been anything but that since then.
So Harvard will have it first and 10 at their own 27. They'll go I formation in the backfield with Clifton Dawson, the deep back. Wide receivers are split. Liam O'Hagan is under center. On first down, it's a handoff to Dawson up the middle. Loses the football. There's a scrum. I think the Quakers might have it. Johnny Williams and O'Hagan are fighting for it. Let's see. Who's got it. Penn football. Clifton Dawson with a rare fumble. And the Quakers pounce on it back at the 21-yard line. Scotty Williams and Liam O'Hagan kind of met at the football, and Williams won the battle. And it's the third turnover of the first half for Harvard, and Penn with a chance to really put some serious pressure on the Crimson, already leading by 10.
That's just a second effort by Scotty Williams, because as you said, the ball was lying there. It looked to me like Liam O'Hagan had a better shot to get there, and Scotty just muscled his way in and almost took the ball away from him. It looked as if the handoff really came off Dawson's thigh pad. I'm not sure he ever really had control of the football.
I thought O'Hagan stumbled a little coming out.
I think he got a low handoff there. Dawson never quite got it clean. Anyway, Quakers are in great position here.
First and 10 at the Harvard 22. Irvin straight back to throw, firing across the middle. Picked, almost intercepted. He wanted Matt Carey on a little crossing pattern, and was almost intercepted by Doug Dulles, the safety, who stepped in front. Incomplete second and 10.
Well, I'm not sure whether Irvin unloaded that before he wanted to, because it looked like Matt Carey really wasn't ready to make the catch. In fact, he had his back to the ball. And I don't know whether that gave the Harvard defender that one-step advantage, because he could see that the ball was being released. Anyway, that was pretty ugly.
Second and 10 for Penn at the Harvard 22. Irvin in shotgun. Sandberg to his right. Three wides in the game. They go slot left. Irvin lifts the leg. Harvard showing blitz. They come. Irvin back to throw. Fires on the right side. Incomplete. One of Billy May at the 15, and he slipped making his cut. He was open. But May slipped as soon as he tried to come out of his route. It's going to bring up third down.
Well, it was the right call and the right throw, because they were really coming after Irvin that time. From the coming through Penn's right side, the ball was thrown to Penn's right side, and Billy May was open, as you said, but he just kind of lost his footing.
So with 8:56 to play in the first half, 17-7-10, and the Quakers facing a big third and 10 at the Harvard 22.
Wow, they need a completion here, Matt.
Really want to keep the momentum going after recovering that Dawson fumble. Irvin in the gun, three wide, slot left. Amuashampong, helms Amuashampong in the game to the left of Irvin. Irvin takes the snap, he's back to throw. He's got time, firing across the middle, complete to Mizell inside the 20, down to the 18-yard line. Gain of about 5 yards, not nearly enough for the first down. Does move the Quakers a little closer for a field goal attempt. Looking at about a 36-yarder for Braden Lepisto, who has already connected today from 38. It'll be 37 officially. This one from the right hash, out of the hold of Scotty Williams, making a 13-point game. Good snap, good hold. Lepisto's kick is up. It's got the distance, and it is good. 8:16 to play in the first half. 20-7. Penn leading Harvard, and you're listening to Quakers football on the Penn Sports Network.
Penn men's basketball season tickets are on sale now. Purchasing season tickets is the only way to ensure that you'll have the best seats in the historic Palestra as the Red and Blue make their run for a third straight Ivy League title. Purchase your tickets by going online at PennAthletics.com. Fans, if you're looking for a cheesesteak in University City, there's no better place than Abner's Cheesesteaks, a neighborhood tradition. Located at 38th and Chestnut Street and abnerscheesesteaks.com. Abner's provides a full menu of sandwiches and also is available to cater your next event. For more information, visit their website at www.abnerscheesesteaks.com. Abner's Cheesesteaks, a proud sponsor of Penn Football.
To play in the first half. Penn leading Harvard 20-7. Braden Lepisto's second field goal of the half, a 37-yarder. Just 3 yards on four plays for the Quakers in a drive that took a minute 02. They get three out of a turnover, the third turnover of the half from Harvard. A fumble by Clifton Dawson on the first play of a drive. And I guess if there's one thing, if you want to, you'd like to get six out of a couple of these turnovers, but at least they're getting points out of these drives and not coming up empty, which has been the problem the last several weeks. 20-7-10. Harvard, of course, 7-1 on the season, 4-1 in the Ivy League, and they're still holding hopes for a possible Ivy League title.
Oh, it's still up for grabs.
Of course, you got Princeton and Yale doing battle today up in New Haven, and that is a huge game. Yale, of course, undefeated in the league. Princeton just the one loss at Cornell. Lepisto to kick off for the Quakers. Chang Ho near Neil Sherlock back deep for Harvard. Lefisto gets off an end-over-end kick taken by Ho at the 6. Straight ahead to the 10, to the 15, middle of the field. Ho to the 20, has a team to the 25 after the 28-yard line, where he's finally tackled by Pat Kiviner. And that's where Harvard will take over, first and 10 at their own 28-yard line. 8:06 to play, first half. It's 20-7 Penn. Harvard will come right to the line of scrimmage, starting from their own 29. O'Hagan in the gun, Clifton Dawson, who fumbled the last time he touched the football, to his left. It's a four wide receiver set. O'Hagan calls for the football on first down, hand off to Dawson running right, cuts inside 30, 35, lifts the leg 40, out to the 45-yard line. He just stepped over Tyson Margo at about the 38-yard line. Boy, he is real fluid once he gets rolling. Gain of 15 yards and a first down for Harvard.
Yeah, he doesn't need much of an opening for him to turn it up in there. And we got an injured Penn player down, way downfield.
Greg Ambrosi. Yeah. He's all the way down at the Harvard 32-yard line, well away from the play, right in the middle of the field. Did not see anything that happened. As we said, it's very far away from the play. Greg's had a great year this season. And he's up to his feet and walking up, but not able to put a whole lot of
left leg.
Not able to put any pressure at all on that left leg. And needs help getting off the sideline. So keep an eye on that. We said Greg Ambrosi and Tyson Mogul have just been a phenomenal tandem on the corner for the Quakers this season.
Now, one thing that I've noticed is Joey Brown has been playing a fair amount at that corner in this game, too. I don't know whether Greg was banged up coming into the game and just aggravated something, or whether it was a new injury, or whether Joey Brown was just playing well enough to earn more playing time.
First and 10, Harvard at their own 45. O'Hagan in the gun, four wide, slot to either side. O'Hagan takes the snap, he's back to throw. He's firing on the left side, and it's complete. To midfield, into Penn territory, to the 44-yard line. Matt Lagacy makes the catch. We're going to give him the 43 on that crossing pattern, and that's a gain of 12, and it's another first down. We talked about how well the Penn offensive line is playing. The Harvard offensive line has done a pretty good job here in this first half as well.
Well, they went right after Joey Brown that time on the wide side corner for Penn. Let's see if they think they found something that they can exploit.
First and 10, Harvard at the Penn 43. O'Hagan in the gun, Dawson to his left, four wide, slot to either side, and it's going to be a handoff to Dawson, and now an end around the Lagacy. Gets a big block coming around from O'Hagan, but Pat Kiviner comes up from the secondary and makes a nice open field tackle at the 40-yard line. Marinelli was sealed off by O'Hagan, who did a nice job of giving Lagacy the lane, but it was Kiviner slicing through and holding that to just a four-yard gain. Says right as soon as Dawson made that handoff, he thought he might have the corner.
Yeah, Marinelli just gets blindsided on that as he reads the reverse and tries to roll back into it. Although it was a pretty interesting collision. I'm not sure whether O'Hagan didn't get the worst of it.
Second and 6, Harvard at the Penn 39. Quakers leading 20-7 here in the second quarter. O'Hagan's in the gun. They go three wide, slot right. O'Hagan takes the snap, hands it off to Dawson, running right, trying to turn the corner, can't get much. He's actually going to lose a yard, back to the 40-yard line. Quakers strung that out nicely with Fairbanks and Jordan Manning coming in and making the tackle, and that's going to put Harvard in a third and long, third and 8.
And that's, again, a kind of vintage play for Clifton Dawson. It's a off-tackle sweep depending on where it breaks, and the earlier attempts at this, he's found a running lane when he turns it up. That time, way too many blue jerseys, and Penn stuffed it.
This is where Penn struggled the last couple weeks, third and long defensively. Third and 8, Harvard at the Penn 41. O'Hagan back to throw, fires left side. It's complete. First down, Harvard, down to the 30-yard line. Matt Luff, the freshman wide receiver, makes his first catch of the game. It's good for 11 in the first down, and just as we said, the last couple weeks, really last week, it seemed the third and longs really killed the Quakers defensively.
Pretty hard to defend against that. Again, it's just a short post from the wide receiver. The ball was right there and left right in the chest.
The first and 10, Harvard at the Penn 30. O'Hagan in the gun, Dawson to his right, three wide. They go slot right. O'Hagan, play action, back to throw. Has time, firing on the right side, and it is caught down to the 14-yard line right in front of Joey Brown. That's Luft again making the catch to the freshman. making his presence known. Brown had pretty good coverage, and I thought for a moment might have actually been able to knock the football away, but Luck was able to bring it in.
Well, it looked like he might have got a hand in front, as you said, but they have clearly picked on Joey Brown since Greg Ambrosi went out of the game. That's four balls, three of them thrown right to where Joey Brown's in coverage.
First and 10, Harvard at the Penn 14. O'Hagan in the gun, four wide, flat to either side. Dawson to the right of O'Hagan. O'Hagan is back to throw. Firing on the left side, it is tipped and incomplete. It was thrown behind Corey Mazza that time. Mazza got his backhand on it, but could not bring it in.
Well, they went after him again. Again, the same pattern every time. It's just that 7 yard and then break to the post. That time, as you said, O'Hagan had the ball well behind him. Probably a good thing for him because it looked like Jordan Manning, the safety, had smelled that and was in position maybe to step in front.
Looks like they're looking at the calf on Greg Ambrosi. It's not a knee. They're rubbing, you know, the calf in the lower leg shin area. And we'll keep an eye on that. They're working on him right in front of our booth.
Maybe it's just a cramp.
Second and 10, Harvard at the Penn 14. O'Hagan in shotgun takes the snap. He's back to throw. He's got time. He's firing it on the left side. Incomplete. Wanted Legacy out at about the 9 yard line, and it was a poor throw by O'Hagan. That's a long throw, too, coming from the right side, trying to throw that long out pattern. Incomplete, and it's going to be third down.
And kind of a double look that time because Scotty Williams was trying to play him short, although the receiver got beyond him, and he's looking for help from Jordan Manning, who was coming from safety. But I think had that ball been well thrown, it probably still would have been a completion. But as you said, not a good throw by Liam O'Hagan.
Third and 10, Harvard at the Penn 14. Dawson to the right of Liam O'Hagan is in shotgun. Three wide receivers, slot left. O'Hagan back to throw. Has time, floating on the left side. Incomplete at the 6 yard line. That time off the hands of Matt Legacy. Good coverage by Britton Ertman. And it's going to bring up fourth and 10, and it's going to bring out the field goal unit for Harvard.
Yeah, they tried to get Agassi in the flat as the second receiver, the short receiver, and again, the ball thrown high, possibly catchable, but it would have been a real, real difficult catch. So let's see what the Harvard kicking game's all about.
Matt Schindel, 6 of 11 on field goals this year, so he's no gimme by any stretch of the imagination. Clem McDavid, the holder. This will be a 31-yard attempt from the right hash, a good snap, a good hold. The kick is up, and the kick is squeaked through. And it's 20-10. Harvard gets three on that drive. 5:11 to play in the first half. Quakers lead shift cut down to 10. It's 20-10. You're listening to Quakers Football on the Penn Sports Network.
Red and blue pride. That's what every fan of Penn Athletics feels every day. And now you can get your very own red and blue pride merchandise at the brand new online store at PennAthletics.com. Penn Athletics' new store features logo apparel from brand names such as Adidas, Antigua, Cutter and Buck, and Russell Athletic. And it's the best way for a diehard Quaker fan to show their true passion. Show your red and blue pride today by purchasing officially licensed gear from PennAthletics.com.
Five-11 to play in the first half, 20-10. Penn leading Harvard as the Crimson get three on that drive. Quaker defense bent a little but came up big once Harvard got inside the 20-yard line. Kind of surprised that we haven't seen more of Clifton Dawson Hench. They've really focused on the passing game here in this first half, and you know, Dawson's broken a couple of big ones. Quakers have done a good job on him, but he doesn't seem to really be the focus of this game plan for Harvard here early on.
They probably have seen the game film from the last 3 weeks and realized that in all three cases, the quarterback's had a pretty good day hitting that short stuff against Penn. And, you know, even though Clifton Dawson is the franchise, they may feel they have to have that passing balance in the offense.
Patrick Long to kick off for Harvard. Wynn and Shepard back deep for the Quakers. This one's a missile, end-over-end kick. Shepard takes it 2 yards deep in the end zone, and he will take a knee for the touchback. So, well, Long shank one out of bounds earlier in the first half. He got all of that one. It's a touchback, and the Quakers take over. First and 10 with 5:04 to play in the first half. Penn leading Harvard 20-10. Harvard has turned the ball over three times here in the first half. Quakers offense, couple of nice long touchdown drives. Since then, they've been kind of shaky as the Harvard defense seems to have rebounded. Quakers getting points because of short fields after turnovers, but Harvard keeping them out of the end zone. The first and 10, Penn, moving right to left on your radio dial. Quakers at their own 20, three wides in the game, slot right. Irvin in the gun with Sandberg to his right. On first down, Robert Irvin calls for the football. It's a handoff to Sandberg up the middle. He's going to be trapped in the backfield and dropped for the loss of three. Harvard all over that play. Brenton Bryant with his eighth tackle for a loss this season. A loss of three, and it's going to bring up second down, and let's call it 12 as they'll give Sandberg the 18.
Well, you had said at the top of the broadcast that Harvard's defense was number one in the nation against the rush, and Penn had a pretty decent time with them in the first quarter, but since that time it's been a struggle.
Second and 12, Penn at their own 18. Marcus Lawrence, the freshman wide receiver in the game, out to the left. It's going to be a handoff to Sandberg trying to turn the corner. He gets the 15 to the 20, out of bounds to the 22-yard line. That'll be a gain of about 3 yards. It's going to put the Quakers in a long third and nine. You know, Harvard seems to have gotten their sea legs under them defensively.
Well, Joe did a good job again at trying to sprint to the sideline and picked up at least the yardage that they lost on first down, but still not a very enviable third and nine at your own 21-yard line.
Irvin Work under center. Amuah Champong is the game. He's in the game. He's the defect. Three wide. They go slot left. Irvin straight back to throw. Firing on the left side, incomplete. No one really in the vicinity of that football at the 30-yard line. Braden Lepistel, I guess, was close, but I don't think he was the intended receiver. So it's a quick three and out for the Quaker offense with 4 minutes exactly to play before the break.
Well, I think the Harvard defenders are doing a pretty good job of jamming the Penn receivers. That time they really held Braden up, and he was making a little turnout move there, but by the time he made the move, Robert Irvin had already thrown the football.
Stephen Williams for Harvard, standing back at his own 41-yard line to return the punt of Anthony Malillo. And Malillo gets off a good, high, wobbly spiral. Williams takes it at the 31. He breaks one tackle, trying to get to the right side, turn the corner, can't quite get there, steps out of bounds at the 33-yard line. And that's where Harvard will take over first and 10. They're going to give him the 35. So Harvard will have it first and 10 at their own 35 with 3:48 to play before the break. Penn leading the Crimson 20-10.
I'll tell you, it looked to me as that play unfolded on the sideline, Coach Bagnoli now asking the same question I would be. There was definitely a block from the back, and it wasn't a block as much as putting a hand and shoving from the back, but it amounts to the same thing right in front of the official.
First and 10, Harvard at their own 35. O'Hagan in the gun, four wide, slot to either side. O'Hagan back to throw. He's got time, fires on the left side. He's got a man wide open. It's Matt Wolf, the freshman, out across the 45 to the 46-yard line. It's a gain of 11. This is what Harvard's done in the passing game. And as you said, the last couple of weeks, this is what we've seen, is teams aren't trying to go deep. They're just taking that intermediate stuff, that 8 to 15-yard range, and really just kind of picking at that Quaker defense.
Well, they keep picking at Joey Brown, and it's, I said, interestingly, he was actually getting some playing time in the first quarter, so it's not as if he's a total inexperienced player in that secondary. He's not, but they're certainly picking on him right now, and now the coaches are talking to him.
And we're going to have a Quakers timeout. We'll take one as well. 3:28 to play, first half, 20-10, Penn leading Harvard. You're listening to Quakers football on the Penn Sports Network.
Fans, if you're looking for a cheesesteak in University City, there's no better place than Abner's Cheesesteaks, a neighborhood tradition, located at 38th and Chestnut Street and abnerscheesesteaks.com. Abner's provides a full menu of sandwiches and also is available to cater your next event. For more information, visit their website at www.abnerscheesesteaks.com. Abner's Cheesesteaks, a proud sponsor of Penn Football.
.328 to play in the first half. 20-10, Penn leading Harvard. Quakers trying to rain on the Crimson Parade. Harvard coming into this game 7-1 overall. They are 4-1 in the Ivy League and still holding out hopes for an Ivy title.
Well, we also want to keep in mind that the fewest points that Harvard has scored this year is 24 in any game. So they got 10 on the board now, and my guess is they're not done yet.
After the timeout, first and 10, Harvard at their own 46. O'Hagan in the gun, four wides, a slot to either side. Clifton Dawson to the left of O'Hagan in the backfield. And O'Hagan hands it off to Dawson up the middle, gets through the point of attack to midfield, 45-40. Dawson into Penn territory all the way down to the 35-yard line. Clifton Dawson with 20 on that carry. Another first down for the Crimson.
Well, the only time they've really stopped him is when the wall of defenders is almost shoulder to shoulder, because if you give him any kind of a crease or any kind of a hole up there, he finds his way into it, and once he crosses the line of scrimmage, that's when the fun really begins.
First and 10, Harvard at the pen, 34. O'Hagan in the gun. Dawson to his left, four wide. Slot to either side. O'Hagan back to throw. Has time. Now he's under some pressure, and he's going to be sacked back at the 45-yard line by Naheem Harris. First time the Quakers have really gotten to O'Hagan today. It's Naheem Harris wrapping O'Hagan up for a loss of 12 yards all the way back to the 46, the third sack of the season for the Quakers' junior nose guard. That's a big play here with 3 minutes to play in the first half.
He won't get a lot of quality points or style points on this one, but Naheem Harris gets in there in a hurry and literally wrestles through several different takedown moves on Liam O'Hagan and finally gets him down to the turf, but it's a struggle.
Well, while we've got a moment here, I want to make everyone aware, for those of you that come out here to Franklin Field pretty regularly, you get here early enough before a game, the tunnel where the Quakers come out on the far side of the field, they've erected a plaque of Coach Dan Safiri, Coach Lake, if you will, to just honor him for just being such a special part of this Penn football program. And they had a little ceremony prior to the game today, Coach Bagnoli, and a lot of former players who were instrumental in getting this done, along with the Penn marketing and development staff. And it's just a really cool thing, and I think anyone that knows Quaker football knows Coach Lake, Hench.
Well, Coach Lake is a legend, of course, and most people don't know how he got the name Lake, but he would always try to help people understand the pronunciation of his last name, Safiri, as in Lake Erie. That's where it came from.
So we're just happy to have Coach Lake around the program, and it was a great ceremony before the game. Second and 22, O'Hagan in shotgun, back to throw. He's under pressure again, dumps it over the middle. Boston's open in space to the 40, 35, down to the 30, breaks the tackle, down to the 26-yard line before Britton Ertman unloads on him. That is a big-time play for Clifton Dawson. He will gain 20 yards on that little dump-off pass, and it's going to put Harvard in a 3rd-and-3. And boy, as soon as he made that catch, Hench, you knew that was danger.
Trouble. Again, really nice action in the backfield by Liam O'Hagan to get that ball off. He's just very athletic back there.
3rd-and-2 for Harvard at the Penn 26. O'Hagan under center, I formation backfield. Wide receivers are split. And off Dawson up the middle, and he's going to have the first down, down to the 20-yard line, where he's finally wrestled down by Joe Anastasio, the Quakers' leading tackler, who was slow getting up. So was Michael Marinelli.
And yeah, we get a couple guys down on that one. And that was just straight-ahead power running by Clifton Dawson. Nothing fancy there. Just straight wedge blocking off that right side, and he powered in behind it.
Anastasio is still down. Marinelli's coming over, holding his right shoulder, or maybe his bicep. They're still looking at Joe Anastasio, the Quakers' fine junior linebacker, who's had a great season. 81 tackles coming into today. 8.5 tackles for loss and a sack.
I think that's Brian Fairbanks.
Oh, you're correct. It is Brian Fairbanks.
The only reason I knew that is I saw Joe Anastasio walking around. I go,
58-58.
Yeah.
So right. Fairbanks is up and walking off. Fairbanks is in a monster as well on that defensive line. Looks like he's trying to maybe stretch out his back.
Yeah, or his left shoulder or some. Looks like he strained something over there. So we've already got Greg Ambrogi out of the game.
Adam Licari is in now for the Quakers, replacing Fairbanks. The 1st-and-10 Harvard at the 20th Penn. 2:17 and counting to play in the first half. O'Hagan takes the snap, back to throw, rolling to his left, firing on the run, intercepted. Jordan Manning running down the right sideline, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, midfield, Manning in the Harvard territory, down to the 33-yard line before he's finally tackled, and Liam O'Hagan threw the football right to him, Hench.
I have no idea what was going on there, except Penn's really doing a good job at disguising the defense out on that right side, actually Harvard's left side, and I don't know whether O'Hagan was expecting something to happen or the receiver to break into the area, but there was nobody there. As you said, Matt, he threw the ball right to Jordan Manning, who showed some real niftiness hustling with the football coming back. Now, I don't know what happened there. He just underthrew it. Way underthrew it.
Wow, Manning with a great break on the ball, but threw it right to him. Second interception of the season for Jordan Manning, and that is a huge play. If nothing else, even if the Quakers don't get any points here, that was almost a sure three for Harvard. The fourth turnover of the first half. First and 10-10. It's a Harvard 33. Irvin in the gun. Three wide. They go slot left. Amu'a Champong to the right of Irvin in the backfield. Harvard showing blitz off the corner. It's a handoff to Amu'a Champong. Off right tackle, and he is going to lose a half a yard back to the 33.5-yard line with 90 seconds to play.
Well, you called it. The blitz came from Penn's left side, and it was Ryan Tully and Chase who just continued on the blitz and chased Amu'a Champong down from behind.
Second and 11 for Penn at the Harvard 34. Irvin in shotgun again. Four wide. Slot to either side. Irvin back to throw. Has time. Fires down the middle. Incomplete. Wanted Lepisto at the 25-yard line. And the timing is just awful on that.
As I said before, Matt, I think Harvard defensively is doing a good job of jamming these Penn receivers and banging them out of their roots and affecting the timing. That time again, had it been a half a second later, Braden, who would made his cut and had been jostled down there, would have had more time to get his head and shoulders around and see the ball, but he never even saw it.
So minute six, Quakers with a third and 11 at the Harvard 34. Robert Irvin in shotgun, four wide, slot to either side, Sandberg to the left of Irvin in the backfield. Irvin takes the snap, blitzes on. Irvin fires off the back foot, incomplete, off the backhand of Braden Lepisto. There's a flag back where Irvin was hit, and it's going to be a hold against the Quakers. So this possession after the interception has just been an unmitigated disaster. Minute one remaining here in the first half.
Harvard is really gambling on defense. They are putting 8 and 9 men up at the line of scrimmage and playing man-to-man defense against four wide outs, and actually doing a pretty good job of it because nobody's been wide open. And I'll say one more time, they're doing a good job of knocking the Quaker receivers out of their routes.
So Harvard will decline the penalty, and it'll bring up fourth down and 11 at the 34-yard line. See what the Quakers decide to do here. It'd be a 51-yard field goal, and that's not going to happen.
Penn has two timeouts, and they probably would be wise to take one here.
And that's exactly what they do, and we'll take one as well. 61 seconds left in the first half. Penn leading Harvard 20-10. You're listening to Quakers football on the Penn Sports Network.
Penn men's basketball season tickets are on sale now. Purchasing season tickets is the only way to ensure that you'll have the best seat in the historic Palestra as the Red and Blue make their run for a third straight Ivy League title. Purchase your tickets by going online at PennAthletics.com.
Make the most of your time when you travel on a Stella Express for business and get everything you need to work or relax, like conference tables for holding meetings, a quiet car to catch up on sleep, outlets to recharge your laptops and cell phones, personal attention from a Stella staff, and a cafe car so you can grab a bite to eat. To book your next business trip on a Stella Express, call 1-800-USA-RAIL or visit Amtrak.com.
Minute one to play in the first half, 20-10, Penn leading Harvard. Quakers facing a fourth and 11 at the Harvard 34. Quakers called a timeout, and I think they're going to go for it as it looks like the offense is huddling on the sideline.
I think they got to take a shot at a first down here and see if they can, see if they can get some points here. The punt does them no good. It's going to go out of the end zone. I mean, they could force them deep, but Harvard, even if this isn't successful, they're going to have less than a minute to work with.
So on fourth down, Irvin has four wides, trips left. Irvin in shotgun, low snap. Irvin picks it up, and they're going to say he was down at the 41-yard line, and that's going to be a turnover on down.
Oh, my.
So probably next to a turnover, the one thing you didn't want is a sack, which is equivalent of what that was.
Well, it was a bad snap out of the shotgun, and as he went down to field it, Robert Irvin, again, probably not having a lot of presence to think about it, went down on one knee to field the snap, and of course, once he gets his hands on it with his knee on the ground, the play's blown dead, so that's just a disaster right there.
Harvard has it first and 10 at their own 41. O'Hagan back to throw. He's got time now. He steps up. Now he wants to run. Flag on the play. O'Hagan trips up at the 44-yard line. Flag back on the near side of the field. O'Hagan was on the far side. Let's see what this is about. With 40 seconds left, the clock will stop. It's a 3-yard gain.
Nice work by Tyson Morgan on that open field tackle to bring O'Hagan down inbounds.
And it's a hold against Harvard. Wow.
And they're certainly going to take the penalty on this one.
If you get the yardage, and also since the play ran, they ran about 15 seconds off the clock.
Now the 40 seconds. Harvard has two timeouts. Penn still has one.
Neither team has been sterling these last few minutes here.
No. Opportunities and opportunities, and it just hasn't created any points for Penn anyway. We're really for Harvard.
Now, Harvard's had their chances. They've committed some bad turnovers here in this first game. They've got four of them.
Four turnovers, and Penn has only 20 points.
That's a little disconcerting.
It is.
But ever since that second Joe Sandberg touchdown run in the first quarter, as we've said, Harvard's really tightened the screws defensively. So after the holding penalty, it's first and 20, Harvard on their own 31. O'Hagan in shotgun, four wide, slot to either side. O'Hagan back to throw. They're going to just dump it off middle of the field to Dawson, 30, 35. Dawson out to the 39-yard line with 24, 23. Harvard has two timeouts left, 22, 21. Harvard hustling to the line of scrimmage. Surprised they're not using one of those timeouts here, and it looks like now they're going to take one with 15 seconds, but they lost about 8 seconds there from the end of that play.
Yeah, you got to second-guess that one.
You kind of got the feeling for a minute there as if they didn't know whether they were going to really try something or if they just wanted to go into the locker room. They were kind of caught in no man's land. So 15 seconds. Harvard has one timeout left, as does Penn. Very entertaining first half here at Franklin Field. All you could ask for in a football game on a beautiful November afternoon. 20-10, the Quakers leading. Multiple field goals have been converted for Penn. That's a good thing.
That's a good thing. Four turnovers. That always leads to some excitement. I just wish there were a few more points on the Penn side of the scoreboard. This Harvard team can score. As I said earlier, the fewest points they've scored in any game this season is 24.
And they've moved the football, but they've just short-circuited themselves, putting the football on the ground. And O'Hagan with one that was a tip throw and then just really one terrible throw on their last drive. So second down and 12 for Harvard at their own 39 with 15 seconds left in the first half. Penn leading 20-10. O'Hagan will work out a shotgun with Dawson to his left. Four wides. They go trips right. O'Hagan takes the snap. Straight back to throw. Steps up in the pocket. Firing it down the right sideline. He's got a man, and it's caught at the 30-yard line. Down to the 25 with 8 seconds and out of bounds. That is a huge catch by Matt Wolf, the freshman, working on Joey Brown all the way down to the 25-yard line. The one thing you couldn't afford happened was a big play that stretched the field, and that's exactly what Harvard got with 8 seconds left, and he got out of bounds.
Well, they gave him too much time that time. As you said, Joey Brown in decent position, but boy, the Penn coaches have to be pretty frustrated because they have just singled him out as a defensive liability and are going after him time after time. Mark Washington, who's in there at safety now, also probably just a half a second too late getting over there to help out. So a well-thrown ball by O'Hagan, which can have a very damaging effect here for Penn with 8 seconds left.
And a timeout remaining for Harvard. So right now you're looking at a 42-yard field goal. And with that timeout, they've got time for at least one shot at the end zone, or you do something short just to try to get yourself in closer field goal range. Boy, that's just a play, frankly, it just can't happen.
I've seen it happen too many times this year. I wish I had an answer or even an explanation, but I don't. They just have had a knack of allowing teams to dig out of that hole when they've got them third and long, or in some cases this year, fourth and long.
They're out of the timeout, the Quakers timeout. Here comes Harvard. First and 10 at the Penn 25, O'Hagan in the gun, four wide, the slot to either side, Clifton Dawson to the right of O'Hagan. O'Hagan takes the snap, he is back to throw, he's pumping, he is firing, he's going into the end zone, incomplete, but there's a flag on the play, it's Matt Lux again, once again working on Joey Brown. 3 seconds left, flag was thrown at about the 11-yard line. I guess if the question is pass interference or illegal contact or a hold, and it's going to be a hold. That actually, I guess, works out a little bit better for the Quakers. It's not...
Well, that's a correct call. Joey Brown was all over him. I was kind of watching. And holding. 3 seconds left, so I guess that they're going to try the field goal.
Yeah, they've already got the field goal team out there.
Certainly gotten a competitive advantage after that holding penalty, defensive holding, interference, call what you will. They're going to place the ball
at the 15.
At the 15 on their right hash.
32-yard field goal for Matt Schindel. He's 3 of 6 from between 30 and 39 yards this year, making a 37-yarder. out of the hold of Clem McDavid to pull Harvard to within seven here right before halftime. We've got 3 seconds left. Schindel to Junior. Good snap, good hold. Schindel's kick is up. It's got the distance, and it is good. Harvard sneaks three in the back door at the end of the half. And we are two quarters complete here at Franklin Field. It is Harvard and 10 in a good one. Quakers leading this one 20-13. But Harvard's got to feel pretty good about themselves going in only down seven in the game where they've turned the ball over four times. And the Quakers offense just really unable to do anything after their second touchdown early in the game.
Well, it's also the Quaker defense there not being able to shut that thing down. I was just watching Coach Bagnoli talking with Ray Priori, the defensive coordinator, and Jim Shaker, the offensive or defensive line coach. And they got to be shaking their head because with Greg Ambrosi out of there, we said too many times already, Joey Brown's in that wide side corner and they have just gone to town on him. I don't know what the answer is. I don't know who's behind Joey Brown or what kind of ways you can get coverage. But when you're that wide side corner, you're pretty lonesome out there. There's an awful lot of pressure on you, and Harvard has really taken advantage of it.
So 20-13, 10 leading Harvard. We will take a break. When we come back, the United Healthcare Halftime Show, including a conversation with former Quakers tight end Matt Michalewski. You're listening to Quakers Football on the Penn Sports Network.
Diet Pepsi presents a light, crisp, and refreshing look at new music genres. Like hip hop.
Rolling with my homie, checking out the club. Got the bling bling baby, and I'm looking for love. Player hating homie, stop that hunting. Holla at the DJ, this here's all keep bumping. This keeps life off his dancing. Bumpton moves so ill. I grab the microphone to floss my pills. Got more flow than for soul as the real dealio. MC to the isle that's called shizzle. MC to the isle that's called shizzle. MC to the isle that's called shizzle. MC to the isle that's called shizzle.
Well, there you have it. A light, crisp, and refreshing look at hip-hopera. If you're looking for something else that's light, crisp, and refreshing, grab yourself an ice-cold Diet Pepsi. Light, crisp, refreshing. Diet Pepsi.
Fans, if you're looking for a cheesesteak in University City, there's no better place than Abner's Cheesesteaks, a neighborhood tradition. Located at 38th and Chestnut Street and abnerscheesesteaks.com. Abner's provides a full menu of sandwiches and also is available to cater your next event. For more information, visit their website at www.abnerscheesesteaks.com. Abner's Cheesesteaks, a proud sponsor of Penn Football.
Make the most of your time when you travel on a Stella Express for business and get everything you need to work or relax, like conference tables for holding meetings, a quiet car to catch up on sleep, outlets to recharge your laptops and cell phones, personal attention from Acela staff, and the cafe car so you can grab a bite to eat. To book your next business trip on Acela Express, call 1-800-USA-RAIL or visit Amtrak.com.
It's 2006 Penn Quaker Football on 560 WFIL. Here's the halftime show presented by United Healthcare.
20-13, 10 leading Harvard here at halftime. Quakers forcing four turnovers in that first half, not turning the ball over themselves, but leading by only seven, but it's been entertaining, and we hope for more of the same in the second half. Quakers have had a lot of great tight ends over their time, and one of the better ones, Matt Michalewski, late 90s, early 2000, good pass catcher, good run blocker. Also, since graduating from the University of Pennsylvania, has gotten a chance to flex his acting muscles a little bit. He was a bit part in the movie Invincible. Had a chance to talk with Matt earlier this week, and let's go to that conversation. Halftime here at Franklin Field, Penn and Harvard in Ivy League action, and our halftime guest today is former Penn tight end Matt Michalewski. And first of all, Matt, thanks for the time.
Thank you very much, Matt, for having me.
Well, let's talk a little bit about, before we talk about your football career and your acting career, let's talk a little bit about what you're doing now. How are you paying the bills?
Okay, how am I paying the bills? I work in South Jersey. I work for PNC Investments, PNC Bank. I'm a senior financial consultant broker for PNC. So far, it's pretty good. I like it a lot. I've been with them for 2 years, and I plan on staying with them for a while.
Talk about your Penn career, fine tight end. When you think back to your football career, what are the memories that come back?
Well, memories I have, first and foremost, championships. I was a member of 2000-2002 Ivy League championship teams. Those are definitely, Matt, without question, the fondest memories of Penn football. And, of course, all the people I met, coaches. I'm still very close with a lot of the guys I played with. Those are the fondest memories I have, teammates, friends, coaches, the whole experience. Loved it.
You're in high school, you're looking at colleges. What made you decide to become a Quaker? I'm sure you were looking at a lot of schools, and a lot of schools were looking at you.
Honestly, the decision was pretty easy. I'm from South Jersey, born and raised there. I was always very fond of Penn growing up, knew it was a great place. It basically came down to Penn or Yale. I visited Yale a couple times. Didn't really like it when I was at Penn, felt very comfortable. The coaches were awesome, the people there. Just loved it for me. It's an absolute no-brainer. Wanted to be a Penn Quaker. It's one of the best experiences of my life going to Penn.
Now, you had the opportunity, obviously everybody knows about the movie Invincible based on the life of Vince Papale. You had the chance to be in the movie as far as an extra. Talk a little bit about how that came to pass before we actually talk about the experience.
Well, I basically, Matt, kind of fell into my lap. I was very, very lucky. Saw an email about it, went out to different guys that played college football in the area, Temple guys, Villanova guys, Penn guys. And when I saw the email, I jumped all over it. They're holding a casting call over in Philadelphia. I saw it right away, knew I wanted to go over and check it out, see if I could be one of the guys to do it. So I jumped right on it, went over there, and they did some casting stuff, take a look at you, and then they had actually had football tryouts, two of them, and went through that stuff, and I was lucky enough to make it. I told them I wanted to play tight end, and that I'd played tight end in college. They said, you're a little bit too big, why don't you try offensive line? I was like, sure, love to. So it worked out for me, and I was fortunate enough to be one of the guys they invited to do the movie.
How long an experience was this? This was more than just a one-day thing, right?
Yeah, it sure was. I was actually there for one full week and then a couple of days here and there. And they're full days. It was like a work day. We were there at 6:30, 7 in the morning, and sometimes we were there until 7:30 or 8 at night working full days. It was a tremendous experience, tons of fun. It was great to feel like a movie star for only a week. It was an awesome experience, catered food. It was just an awesome experience.
Anything surprise you about the whole movie business? You got a chance to see kind of inside it. Anything surprise you or not what you thought it would be?
Yeah, actually, what surprised me was how serious they are about the football. The same guys that put together this movie that produced the football part of it also did The Longest Yard, Waterboy, Any Given Sunday, Varsity Blues, all the really big football movies that are out there. These guys specialize in football, and the point that they made that was surprising to me is that they're very, very serious about the sports stuff in movies, and there's obviously a lot of money in these types of movies, and they can't fool the public anymore. So they're using pro football players, guys that have been in the NFL or in arena football, and then some college guys like myself. So the bottom line is when they're making these in Hollywood, when they're making these sports movies, they're very serious about the sports, and they're using pro athletes or college athletes, people that have played the sport at a high level.
Obviously, you had intimate knowledge of Franklin Field, where a lot of the movie was set. That had to be special for you. I'm sure a lot of football memories, just a lot of memories in general, came back hanging out there.
Yeah, it was awesome, and we actually got to use the varsity locker room, and I was the only guy from Penn, so all the different guys from all over the country, guys that had played in the NFL or current AFL football players, they thought a lot of our facilities. They loved Franklin Field. They loved being there. They loved working in there. And they thought a lot of the locker room. They said that it was a lot better than their respective colleges or even the facilities for arena football. They saw the pictures of all the championship teams on the wall, and they were asking me about that stuff. They saw me on the wall there of champions, and it was awesome. They really liked Penn, and I was very proud to be the representative from Penn and talk to them about our stuff in Franklin Field and Ivy League football and our success with Penn football.
And the movie starred Mark Wahlberg. Did you get a chance to run into him?
Yeah, I did, actually. He was in the training room one morning. I walked in there. They needed to put tape on your shoe logos or whatever. And he was laying on the training table there. And just like I'd seen, so many guys from Penn, all of a sudden you walk in there, see Mark Wahlberg laying on there. And it kind of surprised me, and he was said hi to him, you know, introduced myself, talked to him for a couple minutes. He's a real down-to-earth guy. I know it's cliche to say that movie stars are down-to-earth, but he really was just a normal guy, really cool guy, had a lot of respect for all the people there and the different football guys. And then after the shooting, a couple days, he had a barbecue with his friends outside of Franklin Field, and he invited all the football guys to that stuff. And so I talked to him a couple times then, and he was a nice guy, and his friends and other Hollywood people, they were really, really nice people.
How intense was the football stuff? Obviously, you've been through training camps and seasons and all. How did it, from a physical standpoint, how did you hold up?
As far as football goes, it was real. The only thing different was you knew exactly who you're going to block, where you're going to block them, and then where the ball carrier was going to get tackled. And the only thing different than real football, you had to run around camera guys and stuff like that. But other than that, the football was fast, and there was some hitting going on. So that was a fun experience.
And how many times have you seen the movie?
Actually, Matt, I've only seen it twice. I saw it the day it came out, and then a week later, actually, with some of my old 10 football guys I graduated with, we had a party in Philadelphia where we went out, and a couple of us went to see the movie in the theater, actually at the Bridge on campus, and we hung out at the Blarney Stone and went out in Philly afterwards. So I've only seen it twice, but I liked the movie. I thought it was a great movie. Very, very, very pleased with everything, and I'm excited for it to come out on DVD. I'm going to buy it and show my friends and watch it a couple more times.
Matt Michaleski, thanks so much for the time.
Thank you very much for having me, Matt.
Matt Michaleski, enjoy getting to know Matt a little bit this week. As he said, had a great experience with the movie set of the movie Invincible, the story about former Eagles wide receiver Vince Papale. Halftime here at Franklin Field. It's the UnitedHealthcare Halftime Report with Penn leading Harvard 20-13. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll take a look at some of the statistics in the first 30 minutes of play. You're listening to Quakers Football on the Penn Sports Network.
Red and blue pride. That's what every fan of Penn Athletics feels every day. And now you can get your very own red and blue pride merchandise at the brand new online store at PennAthletics.com. Penn Athletics' new store features logo apparel from brand names such as Adidas, Antigua, Cutter & Buck, and Russell Athletic. And it's the best way for a diehard Quaker fan to show their true passion. Show your red and blue pride today by purchasing officially licensed gear from PennAthletics.com.
Penn men's basketball season tickets are on sale now. Purchasing season tickets is the only way to ensure that you'll have the best seats in the historic Palestra as the Red and Blue make their run for a third straight Ivy League title. Purchase your tickets by going online at PennAthletics.com. Fans, if you're looking for a cheesesteak in University City, there's no better place than Abner's Cheesesteaks, a neighborhood tradition. Located at 38th and Chestnut Street and AbnersCheesesteaks.com. Abner's provides a full menu of sandwiches and also is available to cater your next event. For more information, visit their website at www.abnerscheesesteaks.com. Abner's Cheesesteaks, a proud sponsor of Penn Football.
Back here at halftime, Franklin Field, the Quakers and the Crimson of Harvard doing battle. 20-13 is the score, and leading the Crimson, Penn forcing four Harvard turnovers in that first half. Only able to get 6 points off of those turnovers, however, to file that away, but Penn playing well here and leading by 7 over Harvard against a team that is 7-1 on the season. Taking a look at some of the stats from the first 30 minutes on the Harvard side, Clifton Dawson, now the all-time leading rusher in the history of the Ivy League, 9 carries for 100 yards, along of 55 yards. He had that on the touchdown drive that Harvard had on their second possession. 55 yards. He went off the left side and up the left sideline. And that set up Harvard for a 5-yard touchdown pass from Liam O'Hagan to Jason Miller. O'Hagan is 11 of 19 for 143 yards. He's thrown a touchdown, thrown a couple of interceptions. One was off a tip drill. Pat Kemener with that interception. Then the second one was just an awful throw. And Jordan Manning was Johnny on the spot. Took it deep into Harvard territory. Quakers could not convert, however. Catching the football, Matt Wolf, the leading receiver. Freshman for Harvard, 4 for 74. Clifton Dawson, 3 for 29. And Matt Lagacy, 2 for 25. On the Quaker side, and the Quakers didn't do a whole heck of a lot of anything in the second quarter. Joe Sandberg, 11 for 51 and 2 touchdowns, rushing the football. But those yards almost all. In fact, he had more than that. He actually lost yardage on his 3 carries in the second quarter. Sandberg has run the ball well today. Brian Walker came in for a series, rushed for 13 yards on two carries. Nick Sisler with three carries for 10 yards. Passing the football, Robert Irvin, 10 of 21, 86 yards, no touchdowns, no interceptions. Matt Carey, the leading receiver, 3 for 49. Joe Sandberg also has three catches, but for a loss of 1 yard total. Josh Koontz, 1 for 20, and Nick Sisler, 1 for 10. The Quakers saw Harvard get on the board first, a 5-yard touchdown pass from Liam O'Hagan to Jason Miller. The cap a 4-play, 66-yard drive in the first quarter, made it 7-0. Quakers come right back, go 65 yards in 8 plays and 3:35. Joe Sandberg, a 15-yard run. Then the Quakers go 6 plays, 62 yards. Joe Sandberg, an 11-yard run. Braden Lepisto, the extra point both times, make it 14-7. Then it's Braden Lepisto after a fumble on a kickoff. Lepisto with a 38-yard field goal. That made it 17-7. Then Lepisto a 37-yard field goal after an interception. Or rather, after a Clifton Dawson fumble, made it 20-7. Harvard comes back. They get a Matt Schindel 31-yard field goal, cast a 10-play, 57-yard drive to make it 20-10. And then right at the end of the half, a big play, a 36-yard pass from Liam O'Hagan to Matt Luff, sets up Harvard at the gun. Matt Schindel from 32 yards, a 3-play, 44-yard drive in 50 seconds. And that is where we stand now, 20-13, 10 leading Harvard here at the break. Take a break. When we come back, we will get you ready for the second half. This is the United Healthcare Halftime Show. You're listening to Quakers Football on the Penn Sports Network.
Diet Pepsi presents a light, crisp, and refreshing look at new music genres, like hip-hopera.
Rolling with my homies, checking out the club. Got the bling-bling, baby, and I'm looking for love. Player-hating homies, top and fronting. Holla at the DJ, this is our sweet bumpin'. This is like coffee's dampen, bumpin' moves for ill. I grab the microphone to laugh my fill. Got more flow, that's for sure, I'm the real dealio. MC to the isle, that's for shizzle. MC to the isle, that's for shizzle. MC to the isle, that's for shizzle. MC to the isle, that's for shizzle.
Well, there you have it. A light, crisp, and refreshing look at hip-hopera. If you're looking for something else that's light, crisp, and refreshing, grab yourself an ice-cold Diet Pepsi. Light, crisp, refreshing. Diet Pepsi.
Make the most of your time when you travel on a Stella Express for business and get everything you need to work or relax, like conference tables for holding meetings, a quiet car to catch up on sleep, outlets to recharge your laptops and cell phones, personal attention from a Stella staff, and a cafe car so you can grab a bite to eat. To book your next business trip on a Stella Express, call 1-800-USA-RAIL or visit Amtrak.com.
20-13, 10 leading Harvard as we are counting down the end of halftime in the United Healthcare Halftime Report. And the Quakers lead by 7. That's a good thing, Hench. And they played well. They forced 4 turnovers. But anytime you force 4 turnovers in a half, especially at home, you'd like to be up more than 7, that's for sure.
You would like to be up more than 20, too, as a total accumulated. And you and I are talking off the air there during the halftime. You have that eerie feeling here. Maybe it's just that we've been snake-bitten 3 weeks in a row. But anybody who feels comfortable with a 20-13 lead at halftime isn't thinking straight.
Yeah, Penn, and they've got to get the offense back in gear. They moved the ball very well in the first quarter. They didn't move it at all in the second quarter. They got great field position several times. Braden Lepisto was able to bail them out with a couple of field goals, but they didn't really put anything close together to a drive in that second quarter.
Yeah, I think it's probably a combination of things, as you said too, Matt. I think Harvard may have figured out a couple of things defensively. They have been doing a lot of different things, giving a lot of different looks up front. And they're just playing excellent pass defense. They've given Robert Irvin in that second quarter nobody to throw the football to, so he's had to unload early. He's had to unload before the receivers have made their final cuts. And the result of that is that they've not moved the ball very effectively at all in that second quarter. And, you know, we ought to point out there's another important game going on up in Fort Washington where Penn Charter is tangling with Germantown Academy for the Interact Championship. And that's the longest unbroken schoolboy rivalry in the country.
Oh, wow.
Coming up on 125 straight years. And we got our head scout up there and media guide person, Casey Murray, told us that it's Penn Charter 14-10 at the half. So Sounds like they got a great game going up there, too. A
lot of good football in the area here today. It's 20-13, Penn leading Harvard here. Take our final break. That'll do it for the United Healthcare Halftime Report. When we come back, third quarter action. You're listening to Quakers Football on the Penn Sports Network.
Red and blue pride. That's what every fan of Penn Athletics feels every day. And now you can get your very own red and blue pride merchandise at the brand new online store at PennAthletics.com. Penn Athletics' new store features logo apparel from brand names such as Adidas, Antigua, Cutter & Buck, and Russell Athletic. And it's the best way for a diehard Quaker fan to show their true passion. Show your red and blue pride today by purchasing officially licensed gear from PennAthletics.com.
Penn men's basketball season tickets are on sale now. Purchasing season tickets is the only way to ensure that you'll have the best seats in the historic Palestra as the Red and Blue make their run for a third straight Ivy League title. Purchase your tickets by going online at PennAthletics.com. Fans, if you're looking for a cheesesteak in University City, there's no better place than Abner's Cheesesteaks, a neighborhood tradition. Located at 38th and Chestnut Street and AbnersCheesesteaks.com. Abner's provides a full menu of sandwiches and also is available to cater your next event. For more information, visit their website at www.abnerscheesesteaks.com. Abner's Cheesesteaks, a proud sponsor of Penn Football.
Back here at Franklin Field, third quarter about to get underway. Penn leading Harvard 20-13. Harvard won the toss to start the game deferred, so they will get the football to start the third quarter. Take a look at the Abner's out-of-town scoreboard around the Ivy League. Those Columbia Lions lead Cornell 21-7 in the fourth quarter. In the third quarter, Yale just keeps on keeping on. They lead Princeton 28-14. Yale undefeated in the Ivy League and on their way to another victory. And in the fourth quarter, here's the surprise, Brown and Dartmouth tied at 10. So,
you know what I find ironic is that of the three tough losses in overtime that Penn has sustained the last 3 weeks, I would have said that Yale is probably the weakest of the three teams they played, and they're looking at an undefeated season here.
I absolutely agree with you. Seems like they're one of those teams that all people do is talk about what they can't do and where you can exploit them, and then all they do is win.
Yeah, well, you wonder if, again, Princeton left a lot of it on the field up there at Princeton last week after that win for Penn in double overtime, because I would have expected them to beat Yale.
Chang Ho and Nick Sherlock back deep to return the kick for Harvard, standing at their own 2-yard line. Braden Lepisto to kick off for the Quakers. He gets off a high end over end, but short kick. Sherlock will take it at the 11, straight ahead to the 15, to the 20. 25 still on his feet, 30, bounces off a tackle out to the 35-yard line before he's finally corralled there. Britton Ertman with the tackle, and that's where Harvard will take over first and 10 at their own 35-yard line. Liam O'Hagan's gone the whole way for Harvard. We should point out that O'Hagan, maybe a little rusty game action-wise. He missed the first 5 games of this season with disciplinary reasons, and they really didn't miss a beat. As you said, they haven't scored less than 24 points. Chris Tizzotti, the backup, a junior, carried the water until O'Hagan got back, but he has done the job the last couple of weeks and been solid here today. A couple of turnovers. One was a tip, the other one a poor throw. First and 10 for Harvard. At his own 34, O'Hagan under center, I formation in the backfield, wide receiver split, first down, handoff, Clifton Dawson running right, bounces off Jim Malizia, tries to turn the corner, cuts inside 35 at the 38-yard line. That's all Clifton Dawson right there, because there was nothing there. The Quakers had that red, they had him pinned, and he's still able to turn it into a 4-yard gain, second and 6.
You know, we said at the top of the show that Clifton Dawson can just make defensive people look like amateurs out there when they're one-on-one in the open field. And I said earlier, it looked to me like Penn was just missing some tackles, but you just wonder what's the combination, whether Penn is, in fact, not tackling well or whether Dawson's that good. But right now, Clifton Dawson down on one knee. I think he got shaken up on that last play.
This is about the only way he comes out of the game. He is, you talk about an every down back hench. He is in there all the time, but he will have to come out for at least one play. And they will bring in Cheng Ho. We've seen him running kicks back. He's a freshman running back from Georgia. And he will come in, I would imagine, for just one play. Although they're taking Dawson back to the bench.
He looks pretty unsteady going off there, I'll tell you.
Yeah, he is. I thought he just might have had his the wind knocked out of him, but
no,
they're working on him. So Ho is in the game now, the backup tailback. He is to the left of O'Hagan in the backfield. Three wide, slot left. And on Second down, it's going to be an end around. Running with the football for Harvard and into the open field is number 20, Neil Sherlock, across midfield down to the 45-yard line of Penn. Sherlock took the end around and he goes 17 yards for the first down. First time we've seen that action today.
That's just a straight handoff on the long motion coming from left to right. And how the tailback becomes the lead blocker on that. Very symptomatic of what we saw at Princeton last week when Horan, the backup quarterback, ran that play with success.
First and 10, Harvard at the Penn 46. O'Hagan in the gun, four wide, slot to either side. O'Hagan signaling out to his wide receivers, might be audibling. O'Hagan takes the snap, he's back to throw, he's looking, pulls it down, now he wants to run. Bounces it outside, 45-40, out of bounds at the 37-yard line. Tyson Mogul finally made the tackle. Good coverage that time by the Quakers, but a good pocket surrounding O'Hagan, and he was able to scramble out for a gain of 8, and Clifton Dawson is back in the game now.
That surprises me, because he really sort of wobbled off there when he left the field, and normally they'll kind of just check him out on the sideline, but as you said, they took him back to the bench. He's not going to miss this game.
Second and 2 for Harvard at the Penn 37. O'Hagan in the gun, back to either side. They're going to give it right to Dawson, running right now up the middle, down to the 32-yard line. Clifton Dawson didn't miss a beat. Gain 7, and that'll move the chain for the Crimson.
Well, that time Scotty Williams had a good tackle on him, but again, it was 7 yards down the field.
20-13, Penn leading Harvard. Harvard with their first possession here in the second half, and they are moving. First and 10 at the Penn 31. Moving the football hasn't been the problem for Harvard. Keeping possession of it has. First and 10, Harvard at the Penn 31-yard line. O'Hagan under center, twin wide to the right, wing to the left. Dawson alone in the backfield. Now O'Hagan's got to call a timeout. Did not like what he saw at all. That'll be the first time out of the half for Harvard. 12:59 to play, third quarter. 20-13, Penn leading Harvard. You're listening to Quakers Football on the Penn Sports Network.
With Amtrak Share Fares, two's company and three's the deal. Because for a limited time, groups of 3 to 6 can save 25-50% on Amtrak fares throughout the Northeast. The bigger the group, the bigger the savings. So gather the crowd and call 1-800-USA-RAIL or visit Amtrak.com today. And don't forget discount code H620. Not valid on Acela Express, Metroliner, Clockers, Downeaster, or Keystone train. 3-day advance purchase, blackouts, and other restrictions apply. Call 1-800-USA-RAIL or visit Amtrak.com for details.
Philadelphia's Christian Radio, 560 WFIO.
First and 10 for Harvard. Once we emerge from their first time out of the third quarter, 20-13, Penn leading Harvard. Harvard's won the last two games in this series rather handily. In fact, the 20 points today scored by Penn is 7 more than the Quakers scored in the last two games combined against Harvard. Lost 29-3 last year up in Massachusetts, and then it was 31-10 here 2 years ago. Harvard winning that game en route to a perfect undefeated season and an Ivy League championship.
Well, I think if you were really objective about it, you would probably have to admit that Harvard is the most talented group in the Ivy League this year. They were picked to win the league in all the preseason polls and had great early success, as you said, without Liam O'Hagan at the quarterback spot because he was suspended for 5 games. We also ought to point out that Harvard's elected captain for this year got thrown out of school, and so they're playing without him too. So it gives you some idea of the depth they have in terms of talent in their program. And the unfortunate, ironic piece of this is that the Penn Quakers probably could be matching up with them. This could be a game that was played for the championship had their fortunes been a little changed in the last 3 overtime games.
So close. First and 10, Harvard at the Penn 31. O'Hagan in the gun, Dawson to his right, twin wide to the right, wing to the left. O'Hagan back to throw, fires across the middle. It is complete. Corey Mazza makes the catch down to the 21-yard line in front of Joe Anastasio. Quick hitter that time. Mazza's first catch of the game. He's our leading receiver with 32 catches, and we mentioned earlier he has caught a touchdown in 7 straight games. He's going to be close to the first down. I think he's got it where they're marking it, right at the 21-yard line. It looks like they're going to bring the chains out.
One thing that you note about O'Hagan, now he hasn't always been on target here in this football game, but he's got that quick release, and they've run a lot of these quick post inside slant things, and he just kind of stands up and slings the ball in there, gets it away in a hurry so that Penn's linebackers can't get in the throwing lanes. It's happening so quickly.
And they measure. And it is indeed a first down. So Mazda gets 10. 10 leading 20-13. Harvard on the move. First and 10 at the Penn 21. And this has been the spot in the field where the Quakers have been able to force some turnovers and force some magic. First and 10, Harvard at the Penn 21, I formation. O'Hagan under center this time, wide receiver split. O'Hagan handoff to Austin Wright up the middle, breaks one tackle, pushes forward down to about the 18-yard line. Only a gain of three, but once again, he's hit right at the point of attack and turns it into a three-yard gain. That's what makes special running back special is, you know, these three-yard gains here, they don't look like much, but 9 out of 10 backs are stopped for no gain.
It's almost like he's coated himself with Vaseline or snake oil or something because people get a pretty good hit on him. They look like they've got him in the grasp, and the next thing you know, he's off running again.
Second and 7 for Harvard at the 18 of Penn. O'Hagan in the gun, 3 wide, slot right. Dawson to the right of O'Hagan in the backfield. O'Hagan straight back to throw. Has time. Firing it into the end zone. It is incomplete. Out of the end zone. Tyson Mogul and Pat Kimmerer with great coverage on Corey Mazza that time. Bring up 3rd down and 7.
They can pick on Tyson Mogul all they want because he continues to show really excellent pass defense that time, staying all over the receiver, right in better position than the receiver was to make that catch. I think anytime they go to that side, they're doing us a favor.
So another critical 3rd down here. Harvard already in field goal range. 3rd and 7 at the 18-yard line of Penn. O'Hagan has a back to either side. He's in shotgun. 3 wide receivers. They go slot left. Quakers showing blitz. And O'Hagan's going to keep up the middle. He is hit. He breaks one tackle, pushes forward inside the 15 down to the 14-yard line. He's going to be about 2.5 yards short of the first down. But once again, he probably should have been dropped right at the line of scrimmage and was able to turn it into a positive play. But it will bring up 4th and 2, and it will once again bring out the field goal unit.
Adam McCarr got in there in a hurry and got his hands around the ankle, slowed him up. Looked like he was going to bring him down, but unfortunately that didn't happen. And O'Hagan kind of slipped through for a little more yardage, so this shortens the field goal attempt here.
31 yards for Matt Schindel from the right hash. Out of the hold of Clem McDavid. He's 2 for 2 today. Good snap, good hold. The kick is up. The kick is long enough. Kick is no good. Pushed it off to the right. So Schindel misses the field goal, and it's still a 7-point game. 20-13, Penn leading Harvard. The Quakers dodge a bullet there. You know, we talked about how if you're Penn and you look up and you're up 7, but you force 4 turnovers, you'd like to have a little more. I think if you're Harvard, you're starting to think, now, well, we moved the ball up and down the field. We've had to settle for field goals. We don't get anything out of that drive. You can kind of look at this game both ways. There's a lot of missed opportunities.
That's a great point, Matt. You know, you look at total offense, they really have moved the ball very effectively. But there they come away with nothing, and they've, of course, thrown the 2 interceptions and the fumbles.
First down, Penn at their own 20, handoff Sandberg right up the middle, pushes forward maybe for 2 after the 22-yard line. Glenn Doris, middle linebacker, in on that tackle for Harvard. Sandberg exploded in the first quarter. He had more yards in the first quarter than Harvard allows on average per game, but since then he's in the negative column. Second down and 8 for Penn at their own 22 with 10-18. And counting to play here in the third quarter. Penn leading 20-13. Irvin under center, I formation backfield, twin wides out to the left. On second down, Sisler in motion. Irvin play action, back to throw, flips it on the left side, completes to Sisler, 25-30, 35, Sisler out to the 40-yard line. Nick Sisler. We said it several times, but it bears repeating, becoming more and more of an option in this offense, an 18-yard catch and run. And that's a big first down for the Quakers.
Yeah, he actually has been a weapon today. Again, they're lined up in that I formation. He shuffles to the left as the ball's getting ready to be snapped and then continues out into the flat, uncovered. Nice downfield block that time also by Braden Lepistuff.
Good throw by Irvin, too. Caught him in stride. First and 10, 10 at their own 40. I formation backfield. They pitch it out to Sandberg, running left, trying to turn the corner. He gets it a 45, out of bounds at the 46-yard line. He had the corner and then tried to turn it up and stepped out of bounds as he tried to get back lateral, or back north and south, rather. Still gained 6.
Now that play has worked effectively the few times Penn has run it. Again, the quarterback reverses out to his right, and then takes a quick pitch back to the left to Sandberg. It's kind of a naked play, naked pitch out, but it worked effectively for 6.5 yards that time.
Second and four. And at their own 46, handoff to Sandberg, left side, spins out a one tackle, pushes forward for maybe half a yard. And talk about Dawson getting a lot of runs where it looked like he had nothing. Sandberg should have lost three on that carry, and he ends up getting back to the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, that was kind of ugly from the get-go. It looked like Robert Irvin really had to hustle and extend himself even to make the handoff on that play. And I know that wasn't intentional, so something was amiss there.
Third down and four for Penn at their own 46. How about Chris Mizell? Like to see him, Quaker's fine senior tight end, get involved in the passing game here. Third and four, I formation backfield, twin wides to the right. Irvin is under center, Sisler in motion. Irvin straight back to throw, fires on the right side. Sisler got it, midfield. Room to run, 45 to 40, down to the 39-yard line of Harvard. So Nick Sisler with a gain of 16 yards on a little flare-out pattern. And the Quakers move the football again.
Well, if it works once, run it again. They've got twins to the wide side. Sisler's lined up as the I fullback. Shuffles in motion before the ball snapped to the right side, so it becomes a flood pattern, and nobody's picking him up coming out of the backfield.
At this point, that's shame on Harvard when you've gotten gashed with that four times like they have. First and 10-10 at the Harvard 39. Penn leading 20-13, 8:54 to play in the third. First down, Irvin play action. Rolls to his right, fires, complete to Koontz, makes the catch at the 40, pushes forward down to about the 38-yard line. He'll gain only a yard, maybe a yard and a half. We saw that play go for big yardage in the first half. Little bootleg pass to Koontz. He went for 20. This time, Harvard's wide to it. He gains only one, second and nine.
Well, that time they were running into the short side of the field, so he didn't have much room to work with. It's the same action where he comes all the way from left to right, goes into the flat. He heads at the defensive end as if he's going to block him and then just passes him up and goes into the flat. That's why he was open so wide in the first time and even that time too.
Second and nine, 10 at the Harvard 38. Irvin under center. Sandberg alone in the backfield. Play action. Irvin is back to throw. Firing on the left side, and it's going to be intercepted. The pass is intercepted by Stephen Williams at the 24-yard line. He wanted Matt Carey, and Williams just made a better break on the football and makes the interception. That is his fourth interception of the season, and it's the first turnover for the Quakers. Harvard will take over first and 10 at their own 24.
Now, Robert Irvin does a pretty good job of looking off to the right and coming back to the post pattern to Carey coming across the middle. But what happened, actually, is Carey fell down as he made his last cut. He slipped, and Stephen Williams makes the easy interception there because Carey could do nothing about it. He was actually on the ground.
Seen a couple of Quaker receivers slip today in pattern. So Harvard takes over, first and 10 at their own 24. O'Hagan in the gun, three wide, slot left. O'Hagan's going to give to Dawson up the middle. He's going to be hit, he's going to be dropped. Tom Stone rising up tall to dump Dawson for no gain on first down, second and 10.
Now, that's the way to put Dawson on the ground because Stone got in there nice and low, got both legs wrapped around to put his head right in his midsection and drove him backwards, again, like a wrestling takedown.
So second and 10, 7:24 and counting here in the third. We've had no scoring in the third quarter. Penn still leading 20-13. O'Hagan in the gun, Dawson to his left, four wides in the game, slot to either side. O'Hagan lifts the leg, calls for the football, handoff to Dawson, up the middle again, across the 25 to the 26, not much more. Britton Ertman leading the charge inside there, pushing Dawson back after a gain of three, and it'll bring up third and seven.
Well, that's just good team defense again. Clifton Dawson tries to go up the chute that time on a play they've had success with earlier, but the red and blue would have none of that. Interestingly, also, Chris Wynn is now in there at that wide side corner in place of Joey Brown. Just Quaker's changing up to see if he's going to have any better success out there.
Four wides in the game, slot to either side. O'Hagan in the gun on third and seven. Quakers blitz, and they get there. It's Anastasio with the sack back at the 19-yard line. It was Anastasio on the inside lane. Williams on the outside. They picked up Scotty Williams. Anastasio a beeline to the quarterback. And it's going to force a punt for Harvard, and there's a Crimson player down.
That was just a wall of red and blue defenders getting in there and creating all kinds of pressure. That's a big third down play.
So the defense is taking hold here in the third quarter. They're working on, it's one of the Harvard offensive linemen. I believe it's Nick Sobic, their senior left tackle, 6'5", 305-pound senior. Didn't see what happened, but as Hench said, it was a wall of Quakers that came through on that blitz. And they get to O'Hagan, second sack of the game. Anastasio's second sack of the season. And the Quakers will get the football back after that big third down sack. So they continue to tend to Sobic. Let's take a break. 6:24 to play third quarter, 20-13 Penn. You're listening to Quakers Football on the Penn Sports Network.
Penn men's basketball season tickets are on sale now. Purchasing season tickets is the only way to ensure that you'll have the best seats in the historic Palestra as the Red and Blue make their run for a third straight Ivy League title. Purchase your tickets by going online at PennAthletics.com. Fans, if you're looking for a cheesesteak in University City, there's no better place than Abner's Cheesesteaks, a neighborhood tradition. Located at 38th and Chestnut Street and AbnersCheesesteaks.com. Abner's provides a full menu of sandwiches and also is available to cater your next event. For more information, visit their website at www.abnerscheesesteaks.com. Abner's Cheesesteaks, a proud sponsor of Penn Football.
6:24 to play, third quarter. Penn leading Harvard 20-13, and they continue to work on Nick Sobic, the senior left tackle for Harvard. Looks like the right leg, right knee area that they are looking at. It's 4th and 14, and once they're able to care for Sobic, Harvard will be punting. I think the thing you got to like is the Quakers were able to move the football that last drive. Obviously, you don't like the turnover, but for the first time since the end of the first quarter, they put some first downs together, got into a rhythm offensively, and that was good to see.
Yeah, and again, the interception, as we said, Matt Carey lost his footing somewhere along there, and we've seen that several times today, and the timing has been off several times today. So it's made the passing game look almost sophomoric.
But Nick
Sobic, that's good. He's sort of gone off under his own power.
Needs a little bit of help. So we'll keep an eye on that. Sobic, a rock on that offensive line for Harvard from his left tackle position. So Harvard's a punt.
Here's that crazy spread punt formation again.
And we also, with Greg Ambrosi banged up in this game, is Chris Wynn, the backup punt returner, standing back at his own 45-yard line. Wynn has one punt return this year for 2 yards. Schindel to kick it away, standing at his own 5, Wynn at his own 46. Good snap back to Schindel. Quakers bring some token pressure. Schindel gets it away. Wobbly spiral, hits it midfield. Takes a Harvard bounce inside the 40. Down inside the 35 to the 34-yard line. And that is where Penn will take over at their own 34-yard line. Checking the Abner's out-of-town scoreboard in overtime. It's Dartmouth leading Brown 19-13. And in the fourth quarter, it is Yale 31, Princeton 26.
Wow, they're making a game of it up there.
And so, I mean, I know we've been on the short end of the last three, but there's been some great Ivy League
that
football.
That score makes a little more sense, the last Princeton Yale score.
You look across the league, there's been a lot of great games this year.
It's been a really balanced league.
First and 10-10 after the punt at their own 34-yard line, moving right to left on your radio dial. I formation in the backfield. Irvin under center on first down. It's a handoff to Sandberg. Running left, has a team across the 35, bounces outside to the 40, out to the 41-yard line before he is finally wrapped up by Doug Hewlett, the safety for Harvard, but that's a gain of 7, and it'll bring up 2nd and 3.
Well, nice bit of execution there, that by the offensive line for Penn, leading Sandberg up into the hole, and Joe did his typical dance and shuffle move and picked up 7 for his trouble.
And we shouldn't be surprised at this, but it's obvious that the Quakers' offensive coaches did a great job of adjusting at halftime because they were really stymied right in the second quarter, and they've moved the football again. 2nd and 3, handoff Sandberg, right tackle across the 40, pushing forward to the 43, 44-yard line. He will be very close to a first down.
Well, let's see where they unpile it.
I think he got it. There's a Quaker down now.
Banged up there.
That's Andrew Wheatstock.
Andrew Wheatstock, who was kind of leading the charge out there on the right side. They're going to say he's short of the first down. At least I think they are.
They're marking it. Yeah, you know, I think he's going to be a little short. Wheatstock, who was a tight end, and they're going to give him the first down. They're not even going to measure.
Wow.
Wheatstock, who moved to tackle from tight end this year, has really done a fine job for making that switch. He stepped right into the starting lineup and was banged up earlier in the season. Missed some action, but has not missed a beat since he's come back, and he's a big reason why this offensive line has played so well.
He goes 6'3", 240, which is not real big for an offensive tackle these days. But as you said, he's a good athlete, and he's done a really, really commendable job there in that offensive line.
He is to his feet, and he needs a little help getting off the field as well.
And he may have just re-injured that wheel that he hurt earlier in the season.
And he needs help getting off the field, so we hope Andrew's okay. He will be replaced by Chris Kowalczyk, the sophomore, who's kind of been the swing man on that offensive line, the sixth man, if you will, who kind of fills in whenever they're banged up.
And Kowalczyk has a little bit more of that tackle size we're talking about. He goes 6'4", 290.
So first and 10-10 after back-to-back Sandberg runs with under 5 minutes to play in the third quarter. Penn continuing the lead 20-13. They have the first and 10 at their own 44-yard line. Urban under center, I formation backfield, twin wides to the left. On first down, Harvard showing some pressure off the corner. Urban back to throw. He's going to fire on the left side, and it's going to be tipped and incomplete. Braden Lepisto had a hand on it at the 45, and Braden gave a great effort, but he might actually knock it away from Matt Carey, who looked like he was set up to make the catch.
It's again, they've gone back to that flood pattern with Sisler as the third receiver. We got Braden Lepisto and Matt Carey out there. They're all running sideline patterns at three different depths. And that time, I think you're right. It looked like Carey had kind of come under control, and he would have made the catch if Braden hadn't gotten a hand up and deflected the ball.
First, second and 10-10 at their own 44. Irvin's under center, all set eye in the backfield. Wide receiver split. Sandberg, the deep back. Urban is straight back to throw. Urban fires across the middle, dropped by Lepisto at midfield.
Well, I'll tell you, this Harvard secondary, I think, has Penn receivers a little bit rattled because that's a play that Braden normally would be able to grab with one hand. He came in motion from left to right, stopped the pattern, ran down about five, and then did a little curl to the inside. He was wide open, and I mean, that's just usually money in the bank for him. So
I think it was tipped a bit at the line of scrimmage, maybe changed the trajectory a little, but that's still, I think, a catch Braden will tell you. He'll make 99 times out of 100. So what it does is it sets the Quakers up with a third and 10 at their own 44. Urban in the gun, four wide receivers set, trips to the left. Urban back to throw, blitzes on. Urban fires across the middle, incomplete. That one a little high through the hands of Matt Carey at midfield. That'll be an incomplete pass, and it'll bring up fourth down. So the Quakers offense sputters on that set of plays.
And again, that's the kind of pass, you know, you've seen Matt Carey make the catch.
A little high.
A little high. Oh, yeah, it was a little high. It was not a piece of cake by any means.
So Melillo will try to pin Harvard deep. Good snap, and Melillo gets off by a wobbly spiral. Stephen Williams will take it at the 15. He will trip immediately. He will be tripped up, and he will be tackled at the 16-yard line. And that's where Harvard will take over. Ted Rosenbaum, the long snapper for the Quakers, comes all the way down and fires off, makes the tackle. Gotta like to see that.
Yeah,
you can get off a good snap and get all the way down.
And good hustle down there by Scotty Williams, who was the first man down, who actually slowed him up, allowing Rosenbaum to put him away.
So Harvard takes over, first and 10, as we approach the 4-minute mark here in the third quarter. Penn leading 20-13. O'Hagan in the gun. Dawson to his right. Twin wide to the left. And it's going to be a play action fake. O'Hagan rolling to his right. Floats one down the right side. Incomplete. He wanted his tight end, Matt Farbatko, who had a step on Tyson Mogul. But O'Hagan let him too much. It'll be second down.
Oh, my. That had all kinds of problems associated with it. A little play action out of the shotgun. And nobody played for Botko coming down the right sideline. Tyson Morgel reacted to it once it became clear that's what was going to happen. But had that ball been well thrown, that was trouble.
Second and 10. Harvard at their own 17 is the line of scrimmage. O'Hagan in the gun. Wide receiver split. On second down, O'Hagan straight back to throw. He is back. He's under pressure. He just dumps it off to Dawson at the 15, who makes the catch, but he's tackled right there, and he is going to lose yardage. It is Joe Anastasio yet again right in the middle of things. Didn't let Dawson get any momentum on that. It's going to bring up third and 12.
It almost makes you think, Matt, that they're using some kind of spy action on Dawson, because a couple times now you've seen somebody in the Penn defense just lock on to him. That time Anastasio did. And that's why the screen didn't work, because he wasn't fooled at all.
Third and 12, Harvard at their own 15. O'Hagan in the gun, and a four-wide receiver set, takes the snap, fires across the middle, incomplete. Tried to go with a quick hitter to Matt Lagacy, and he really wasn't even looking for the football. So an ugly set of downs there for Harvard.
Well, I mentioned before the quick release that Liam O'Hagan had. That time he really got it out there in a hurry, but Legacy had no chance even to look back to see the football. So a good defensive series for Penn.
And I know that play is obviously designed yards after the catch, but there was so much congestion there. Even if he catches that, I think a lot has to go wrong for the Penn defense for him to get that first down. So Chris Wynn will return the Schindel punt, or hope to at least. He is standing at the Harvard 46. Schindel standing right on his own goal line. Good snap. Quakers bring a little pressure up the middle. Schindel gets it off, though, and it's a good kick. It's going to force Wynn back to the 45, and he fumbles the football. The Quakers are able to fall on it. Chris Ashley all the way back at the 28-yard line, and you can kind of smell that coming. Chris Wynn, not a lot of experience returning punts in game action. Going backwards, it hits off his shoulder pad, but Chris Ashley hustles to the football. And Al Magnoli goes right over to Chris Wynn, and don't do that again.
He's got to make the fair catch there. He was trying to do something heroic, and that probably was a poor judgment and inexperience. As you said, they certainly missed Greg Ambrosi, who, will remind you, got some kind of leg cramp or charley horse, we're not sure what, early in the football game, and he has not been back since.
So a freshman mistake for Chris Wynn. He's done a great job. That's a tough spot for him, but he'll learn. So the Quakers take over after Ashley falls on the fumble. First and 10 at their own 29. Irvin under center. On first down, it's a hand up to Amua Champagne. Breaks one tackle at the point of attack, pushing forward across the 30 after the 32-yard line. There's a flag on the play. And I got to imagine from where that was thrown and the area it was thrown, it's going to be a hold.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that one.
Yeah, it's a hold against the Quakers. They'll wipe out that first down play, and that'll bring up second and 10. We've got 2:51 to play in what has proven thus far to be a scoreless third quarter. Penn continuing the lead, 20-13.
You know, it's also reminiscent of that Yale football game a couple of weeks ago where the whole second half became a field position game. We're seeing it shape up that way right in front of us again, Matt. You know, that punt that should have been fielded, it wasn't. Quakers, frankly, are lucky to have maintained possession. But you know, they get put back in a hole now. They get a holding penalty, and they're deep inside their own 20-yard line, and they really haven't had much room to maneuver.
First and 20, check that, after the penalty at their own 19. Irvin under center, twin wide to the right, I formation backfield. Irvin fires on the right side, Lepistow makes the catch at the 16-yard line, and he'll be tackled at the 18. He'll actually lose a yard. They just try that little quick hitter, inside-out, flip screen, whatever you want to call it. Braden made the catch, but there was not a lot of room out there. Stephen Williams was right up there in coverage, and that's going to bring up second and 21.
Well, I'll tell you, Stephen Williams is a pretty good defensive back that time because Braden tried to give him the slip, that, and it just wouldn't happen.
2:10, 2:09, time ticking away here in the third quarter. Penn leading 20-13, second and 21 at their own 19. Irvin will work out of the gun, a three-wide receiver set. Lepistow, the slot man to the left in motion. Irvin back to throw. Fires right side incomplete over the head of Joe Sandberg at the 15-yard line. A quick hitter. And that will bring up third down. And both offenses just look out of whack here.
They really do. And I think in Penn's case, I'm going to credit the Harvard defense because they're coming with an awful lot of pressure to Robert Irvin, and that time, again, his timing is off. He's delivering it just a little bit too early. He's putting a little too much zip on it. I mean, there are probably a dozen variables that you can describe that could determine whether it's a completion or incompletion. He's probably hit all the variables today one way or another in terms of not doing it well.
Third and 20. Then at their own 19, Irvin in the gun. Three wide, slot left. Irvin takes this low snap. He's going to fire on the left side. Incomplete. One at Braden Lepistow. Almost intercepted. In fact, it was off the fingertip of Ryan Tully, the linebacker. And if he picks that off, it is six the other way. You know, I almost said before they took that snap, the one thing you don't want to do here on the third and long is make the big mistake. And boy, did they come close to making it.
Well, that would have been such an easy touchdown. Ooh. He's got to put some touch on it, and he didn't. And it actually went right through Tully.
Williams and Barry back to return this kick from Melillo. Good high kick hangs up there. Williams settling under it at his own 45, straight ahead to midfield to the 46-yard line of Penn, and that's where he's tackled. But Harvard will have excellent starting field position on this drive. First and 10 at the Penn 46. We've got a minute 39 to play in the third quarter. It's 20-13, Penn leading Harvard.
Well, we talked about field position just a few moments ago, and here's an example of it. Harvard now takes possession inside Penn territory at the 46-yard line, and the defense has played pretty steady in the second half, but you got to wonder, Harvard has also had its share of big plays.
O'Hagan in the gun, Dawson to his right, twin wide, split. O'Hagan takes the snap, play action, rolling to his right, stops, fires, it's complete down to the 41-yard line, backup tight end Jason Miller. He's got the touchdown for Harvard today. He gets down to the, they're going to give him the 41, so that's a gain of 5, and it'll bring up second down and 5. Tight end's not a huge thing in the offense, huge weapon. Only 18 catches between the top two tight ends coming into this one for Harvard.
And now they get Probotko and Miller both in the game. Miller plays the wing against Probotko's tight end.
And they got twin wides out to the left. O'Hagan's in the gun with Dawson to his left. And it's going to be a handoff to Dawson. Stretch running right to the 40, and he's going to be tackled right at the 40. If Pat Kimmerer made a beeline for Dawson, went low, wrapped him up. And a gain of only 1 yard. It's going to bring up third and 4.
That's good defense. I think the sideline helped Penn a little bit there. They tried to run that sweep into the sideline, and Kimmerer took a great angle and came up really quickly to make that tackle. Dawson really didn't have anywhere else to go.
You see them doing a better job in the third quarter of going low on Dawson Hench and wrapping up his leg. Third and 4 for Harvard at the Penn 40. O'Hagan has a back to either side. Three wides in the game. They go slot left. O'Hagan in the gun, lifts the leg, calls for the football play action. Back to throw. O'Hagan is going deep down the left side. He's got a man who's matched up with Chris Wynn, who knocks it away. Corey Mazza, the intended receiver, and the freshman Chris Wynn was out on the island, played it perfectly, and knocked the football away. It's fourth down.
Well, it wasn't Joey Brown that time. It was Chris Wynn they went after on that wide side corner. And again, I think the ball may have been slightly underthrown. That's taken nothing away from Chris Wynn, who was right in excellent position, as you said, Matt, and went up high and got a hand on it and prevented Mazza from making the catch.
And Harvard will at least show punt here on fourth and 4. Penn keeping their regular defense in there just in case. Wynn standing back at his own 10. Schindel will try to pooch this one, and he does indeed kick it. Wobbly spiral. Wynn fair catches it. Fumbles it for a moment, picks it up, and there's flags all over the place. They didn't give Wynn a chance to catch that football. We've seen the Quakers do that a couple of times, get in the way of a guy who can't make the catch, fair catch interference, and this time the Quakers will be the beneficiary on this final play of the third quarter.
Let's see if it's 15 yards, because that's what they walked off against Penn when that happened. Again, Wynn wisely that time made the fair catch signal.
So you can tack on yardage at the end of the fair catch, which was made at the 14-yard line. And that's three quarters complete. A scoreless third quarter here at Franklin Field, 20-13. Penn leading Harvard. Let's get ready for a fun 15 minutes. You're listening to Quakers Football on the Penn Sports Network.
Diet Pepsi presents a light, crisp, and refreshing look at new music genres, like hip-hopera.
Rolling with my homie, checking out the club. Got the bling bling baby, and I'm looking for love. Slayer hating homies, stop and frontin'. Holla at the DJ, this here's Offbeat Bumpin'. This deep light, Offbeat dancing, Boston moves so ill. I grab the microphone to floss my skills. Got more flow, that for soul, I'm the real D.O. MC to the isle, that's for shizzle. MC to the isle, that's for shizzle. MC to the isle, that's for shizzle. MC to the isle, that's for shizzle.
Well, there you have it. A light, crisp, and refreshing look at hip-hopera. If you're looking for something else that's light, crisp, and refreshing, grab yourself an ice-cold Diet Pepsi. Light, crisp, refreshing. Diet Pepsi.
Defense is dominating the third quarter here at Franklin Field. Nary a point was scored. Quakers committed the only turnover on a Robert Irvin interception. And fair catch interference on the last play of the third quarter against Harvard will give Penn pretty good field position to start this drive. First and 10 at their own 29-yard line, leading 20-13. Set in the break. One more score, Hench, would be huge in this game. If the Quakers could get into a two-possession game, you're really feeling pretty good about what you're seeing out of the defense here in the second half.
Yeah, and I don't want to create any kind of jinx here, but keep in mind, as I've said several times, Harvard's fewest points in any game was 24. They got 13 right now.
And Brian Walker is in the game for the second time today at quarterback. Ran the ball twice for 13 yards the first time we saw him. First and 10-10 at their own 29. Walker in the gun. Three wide. Slot to the right. Sisler to the right of Walker in the backfield. Walker takes the snap. Rolls to his right. Throws back to the left side. Chris Mizell got it with a lane. Chris Mizell to the 30. 35. Mizell to the 39-yard line. Chris Mizell with his first catch of the day. And that time they utilized the threat of Walker's feet very well. They brought him to the right. Threw back to the left. Mizell was wide open. It's a gain of 10 and a first down.
Well, that's a great way to set it up because they know Brian Walker's going to run the football. And that time he starts off on the tailback run to the right side and then throws a little slip screen back to Mizell on the left. It's set up really well.
First and 10, 10 at their own 40. Walker in the gun. Takes the snap, and this time he's going to run right up the middle. Walker 40 out to the 44-yard line. Design quarterback draw to gain a 4. And it'll bring up second and 6 on the pass to Mizell. Billy May came running off the field. Looks like he had hurt his shoulder.
On that screen, he was blocking downfield for Chris Mizell. The trainer's checking him out. Looks like he did something to his right shoulder, right hand.
Second and 6 for Penn at their own 44. Walker remains in the game at quarterback. Three wide. They go slot right. Walker in the gun, lifts the leg, calls for the football. Walker back to throw, fires right side, left it though, makes the catch at the 40-yard line. Loses yardage back to the 43, but there's a flag on the play, and I believe, my friends, that's going to be a face mask against Harvard. Little slip screen that Harvard read very well, but I think there's a face mask, and it is indeed a personal foul face mask against Harvard. So that's a big play. Abner's out-of-town scoreboard. It is a final. Columbia beats Cornell 21-14.
So penalties playing a big part in this semi-drive here. The interference with the attempt for the fair catch put 15 yards on it. The screen pass worked successfully. Now we got a face mask on top of the game. So Penn now into Harvard territory at the 42-yard line with first and 10.
7:36 to play in the fourth quarter in New Haven. 34-31, Princeton leading Yale.
Oh, I didn't think they were going to sit down and roll over for Yale.
That Columbia win, their first Ivy League win of the season, a big win over Cornell, where the Quakers will go to end the season next week. First and 10 after the penalty at the Harvard 42. Irvin under center eye formation in the backfield. Joe Sandberg, the deep back. Sandberg takes the handoff up the middle inside the 40, pushing his way down towards the 35-yard line. Joe Sandberg with tough running. Gives him 7. They'll bring up second and 3 with 13:39 and counting to play in the game. It's 20-13, Penn leading Harvard.
Nice work by that offensive line. Shawn Estrada doing a good job.
Andrew Wheatstock, who was banged up the last series, is not back in there. Kowalczyk playing that tackle position. On second down, call it 4 at the 36 of Harvard. Irvin under center. He's going to give it to Sandberg running right. Cuts back inside. Makes a man miss. Pushes forward inside the 35 down to the 33. He'll gain 3, and it will set the Quakers up with a 3rd and 1. Boy, Sandberg is shifty there in a sea of players.
That's just making something out of nothing. As we've said so many times with Joe Sandberg, starts right, stops in mid-stride almost, shifts to the left, and finds a little bit of a seam, picks up plus yardage where there really was none.
Abner's out of town scoreboard final from the A-10. Villanova loses to James Madison, 17-14. 3rd and 1. Handoff Sandberg up the middle. He is hit immediately, and he's going to be close. I think he got it. He pushed forward and dove forward inside the 32. I think he's got it. Where they're running in from on the side, let's wait and see.
Well, if he got it.
He got it. He did indeed have it. No,
just the Sandberg squirm is what got it because, again, he got popped right at the line of scrimmage. And somehow his ability to just sneak through for that extra few yards made the difference there and keeps this drive going.
First and 10-10. Now you start to look at the clock a little, and that starts figuring into your thinking. 12:20 and counting the play in the game. Penn leading 20-13, looking for more. First and 10 at the Harvard 32. Sandberg alone in the backfield, and a 3 wide receiver set. Slot left, Dan Coleman wide to the right. On first down, play action booth. Irvin going to throw, complete Mizell 30, down out of bounds at the 28-yard line. Give him the 27. A gain of 5 yards, and that will make it 2nd and 5. Looks like Mizell bobbled that ball for a minute, but was able to bring it in.
That's another variety of bootleg coming right this time. Mizell in the flat. He had Dan Coleman going deep. I think we're going to see at some point they're going to make that pump fake short, try to get the cornerback to come up and take the pump and try to hit the deep receiver on that. I've been screaming for that all year.
It's coming.
Nobody listens to me.
Second and five at the Harvard 27. Penn looking to build on a 20-13 lead here in the fourth quarter. 11:59 to play. Irvin under center. Offset eye in the backfield. Wide receivers are split. Wide man to the left. Lepisto comes in motion. Irvin straight back to throw. He's got time. Across the middle. The pass is tipped and incomplete. Almost intercepted. Boy, you hate to see any tip fall at that point because then it's anyone's ball game. But it falls harmlessly to the turf and it'll bring up third down.
Andrew Berry in really good coverage again. And one of those short little curl patterns that Penn has had pretty good success with this year. Harvard's been all over it. Yeah, that was one of those tips you go, oh my.
Because it was that high tip.
Oh, yeah.
That was in the air for
way
a while.
Yep.
Big third and five here at the 27 of Harvard. Amu Ashdampong is in the game as the lone setback. Three wide receivers, slot left. Irvin's under center. Irvin straight back to throw. Firing on the left side. It's tipped at the line, incomplete. Wanted Matt Carey, but that ball knocked down right away. And that'll bring up fourth down.
I'm not sure they were going to have any chance to complete that anyway.
I think they're going to try a field goal.
I think they are too, but there's Scotty Williams. All right, didn't see him going out there.
Well, it'll be a 45-yard attempt. Lepisto, 2-for-2, good from 37, good from 38. This would be easily the longest field goal of the season for the Quakers. This is about when I asked Al Bagnoli about his range, and there's a flag on
this
the play.
Not
before
good.
The must be too many men on the field, maybe?
This is not good.
And it looks like the Quakers had too many men on the field.
12 men. Oh, my.
Oh, that changes
there
that.
There goes the field goal.
Move the football back to the 32, and now you'd be looking at a 50-yarder. Their field goal unit's still out there. I can't imagine.
I think they got to play field position here and punt the football.
Yeah, and they will indeed bring the punt team out.
Oh, my.
That was right at the fringe. I had asked Coach Bagnoli about Braden's range when he took over the field goal units, the field goal duties the first time, and he said 45 was about as long, and that would have been it. So now Melilla will try to pin Harvard inside the 10. Williams calls for a fair catch. The ball hits inside the 5, and it's going to roll dead at the 1-inch line. Joey Brown touches it up, and the Quakers do an excellent job in coverage. They drop the football. You can't get any closer to the goal line. Anthony Melillo, who's been great at this his entire career, just dropped his 14th punt of the season inside the 20.
That was great coverage, too. Anthony does such a good job of just popping it up there, letting the coverage team get down under it. The Harvard players were complaining that whoever downed it for Penn had his heels on the goal line, which put them in the end zone, and so they may have had a point there.
Timeout on the field. Penn leading 20-13, 11:38 to play in the game. You're listening to Quakers football on the Penn Sports Network.
Red and blue pride. That's what every fan of Penn Athletics feels every day. And now you can get your very own red and blue pride merchandise at the brand new online store at PennAthletics.com. Penn Athletics' new store features logo apparel from brand names such as Adidas, Antigua, Cutter and Buck, and Russell Athletic. And it's the best way for a diehard Quaker fan to show their true passion. Show your red and blue pride today by purchasing officially licensed gear from PennAthletics.com.
.11:38 to play in the fourth quarter. Penn leading Harvard 20-13, and Harvard on their own half-yard line. I physically do not think the ball can get any closer to the goal line, Hench, without touching it.
Well, the nose is, as you said, it's breathing on the end line.
Final from New Haven. How about Princeton beats Yale 34-31?
Wow.
Well, let's look at that now in the Ivy League standings.
What a comeback for Princeton.
That means that Yale and Princeton are both 5-1, and now Harvard, if they can come back, they can force a three-way tie at the top. So this game became all the more critical for the Crimson in the last few minutes.
Well, if Harvard's going to get to play for the championship next week, should they win here today?
First and 10, Harvard, inside their own one-yard line. O'Hagan under center. And O'Hagan's just going to sneak it out, try to get a little bit of breathing room, and he didn't get much. Maybe he got a yard out to the 1.5. That'll bring up 2nd and 9.
Well, that's certainly the safe call, Dan, where the football literally is the point of it was touching the goal line. They say he got out to the two-yard line.
Now we've got all, they want to reset the play clock, it looks like. Don't quite know what the problem is now. They're ready to go. So it'll be second down and nine for Harvard at their own two. High formation in the backfield. Noah Van Neel is in as the fullback in front of Dawson. Matt Luff, the lone receiver, out to the right. O'Hagan back to throw. He is loading up. He wants to go deep down the middle, and it's incomplete. Luff got tied up and good coverage. Joey Brown and Jordan Manning were both there. That ball didn't have a prayer. And that'll bring up third and nine. So this is a big third down.
Don't say that. We've said it too many times. And you see so many teams will try to take that shot out of their own end zone. That time the Penn defenders were not fooled at all. As you said, Jordan Manning and Joey Brand both had better position on that football than the receiver.
So once again, they'll go tight eye formation, double tight end set. This time it's Corey Mazza split out wide to the right, one-on-one with Joey Brown. Dawson the deep back, and O'Hagan's going to give it to Dawson running left, gets out of the end zone barely after the two-yard line before he's finally tackled by Anastasio Mulgo and Geddon. So that's a drive that goes nowhere quick, and the Quakers are going to get the football back, and they should get it back in excellent field position with 10-26 and counting. So that's how you draw it up, man. You push the football deep inside the one. You go three and out quickly, and you hopefully get the football back in good field position.
Well, you're right on that. And, again, we debated whether the field goal, even if there were no penalty, was going to be a good call. But playing for field position, I think, was the right choice here.
So Schindel standing back. Up against the back line of the end zone. Any kind of a bad snap, he's in trouble. Wynn standing at his 37, or at the Harvard 37, and Schindel gets off a good high kick. Wynn will fair catch it at the 47-yard line, so give Schindel credit. Plus, your kick that time did about as well as you could expect, a 45-yard boot with no return. Wynn with a fair catch, and the Quakers will take over first and 10 at the Harvard 45 with 9:50 to play. Boy, if they could get one first down here, you're in field goal range, and we said a couple of times, one more score to make it a two-possession game would be huge.
Yeah, field position means so much, especially in the fourth quarter, and especially in a game like this where the defenses have been able to pick up the tempo in the second half. Let's see what the Quakers have up their sleeve.
First and 10-10 at the Harvard 47 after the punt. Leading 20-13 with 9:40 to play. Irvin under center, I formation backfield, wide receivers are split. Sisler, the fullback, in motion on first down. It's a handoff to Sandberg, flag is thrown. Sandberg bounces off the tackle, pushes inside the 45 down to the 42, but this is coming back.
They're going to call Joe Sandberg for leaning, and you could just see it. He was trying so hard to maintain his balance, and he just rocked forward.
Well,
right in front of the official, and that's what the call was.
12 men on the field, and now the illegal shift. That's just got to drive Al Bagnoli nuts.
And plus, after a nice run by Sandberg, puts him back in the hole, puts him back in the Penn side of the field position. And
first and 15. Doesn't sound like much, but it's a lot different than first and 10.
Oh, my.
Clock will run now. 9:20 to play. First and 15, Penn, at their own 48. I formation, Irvin under center, wide receiver split. On first down, Irvin pitches it to Sandberg. Room to run right side across midfield, back into Harvard territory, down to the 47-yard line. We're going to say the 48. I think he got cheated a little on that spot. Gets back most of the penalty yardage, and it will bring up second and 11.
Quick hitting cross coming to the right side. Again, from the right hash, not much room for Joe to work with.
Looked like a lot more as soon as he got the football, but Harvard closed quickly.
Yeah, Dan Tanner, one of the safeties for Harvard, did a real good job adjusting and getting back into that and sort of blocking Sandberg as he got to the sideline.
Second and 11 for Penn at the Harvard 48. Irvin under center, I formation. Sisler, the fullback, goes in motion. Irvin back to throw. Firing across the middle. Complete to Matt Carey at the 35-yard line. First down, Quaker.
Well, it was about time they hit one of those other receivers on the flood pattern. It's the same one we've seen. Sisler in the flap at that time instead of running to the sideline. Carey ran the curl as the inside receiver of the Twins. and a nice job under pressure by Robert Irvin to get him the football.
So a first down for Penn, and the clock rolls with 8:15, 8:14 to play. First and 10, Quakers at the Harvard 36. 10-20, Harvard 13. Irvin is under center, I formation in the backfield. The wide receivers are split. Joe Sandberg is the defect. On first down, Robert Irvin takes the snap. Play action. He's back to throw. He's firing on the right side for Lefisto. Incomplete. A great play on the corner by Stephen Williams. Got good position on Braden and knocked the football away. Incomplete.
I tell you, this Harvard secondary knows how to play some football. Again, it was that inside-out move to Lefisto on the sideline, a timing play. The ball thrown pretty well by Irvin. But as we've seen several times, Steve Williams right there to bat it down.
Good job by Irvin, if nothing else. He got the ball up high where only Braden was going to be able to catch it. Williams was able to make the play on it, but it'll knock it away. And it'll bring up second and 10. Line of scrimmage to Harvard, 36. Irvin's in shotgun, three wide. They go slot right. On second down, Irvin takes the snap, rolling to his right. Pumping, floating on the right side. He's got left. It still makes a great catch, but out of bounds at the 15-yard line. Great effort by Braden, and Irvin let him a little too much, but he didn't have a lot of room to put that ball into. So it's an incomplete pass, and it's third and 10.
You know, on the run, rolling to his right, you know, Robert Irvin, that's a great throw. It's just, unfortunately, about a yard too wide to put the ball out of play. And again, a great effort, diving effort by Braden Lefisto to make the catch, but it's for naught.
So third and 10 at the Harvard 36. You need at least eight yards here, I think, to get Braden a shot at a field goal. Amu Ashampong alone in the backfield, three wide. The wide man to the left, Coleman, comes in motion to the right. Irvin back to throw, fires right side, complete to Coleman, makes the catch at the 33. He is tackled right there, coming up and making the tackle for Harvard. Chris Carlson, a freshman defensive back, and that is going to make it fourth down and 5 at the 32-yard line.
I think they're going to go for it here.
Pin them once in this situation, but
the ball wasn't quite this close. Where were they going to try that field goal from?
Would have been a 45-yarder, so you would have been on the 28. So they were. This is where they were after the penalty last time. I don't think the Quakers are going to take their time, let the clock roll down, and take a time out here and think about this.
Oh, now, wait a minute. The official back there threw a flag. Maybe they're going to take the penalty and punt the football.
Yeah, that's exactly what they're going to do.
Okay.
So the Quakers will take the dead ball.
I want to save that timeout.
Delay of game. Quakers have all three timeouts. Harvard with two. The delay of game puts the football back at the 37 and makes it fourth down and 10. And once again, Anthony Melillo will try to punt the ball and pooch it deep inside the 5-yard line. This time it's Chris Sanders, the backup wide receiver, that's back to return this punt. Can Anthony do it again? Good snap. Melillo pooches one end over end. Sanders runs up, lets it hit at the 5-yard line, and it's going to take a Quaker bounce inside the 5, and he did it again. This time the Quakers dump it at the 3-yard line with 6:49 to play in the game. And once again, they give Harvard a long field.
Oh, that's the right call again. He can put the ball deep in the territory the way Anthony Melillo has done here. It's not quite on the one-inch line the way they did it last time, but I think the Quaker defense will settle for turning the ball over to about they haven't spotted it yet. Maybe it looks like about the 3-yard line. 6:49 to go in the game. Penn still up 20-13.
And that is something Melillo's been great at that since day one when he starts took over the punting duty.
You know, it's interesting, too, because he takes that one step punt formation technique, which you don't see too often these days. Most of them are taking a two-step
very
approach to the ball, yep, and he just pops it right up there.
So Harvard will have its first and 10 on their own 3-yard line. Harvard has two timeouts left. They had to burn one early in the third quarter. I think it might have even been on their first possession they had to burn a timeout, so remember that. The Quakers with all three. But Harvard has to go 97 yards to tie this game. And Harvard needs a win to force a three-way tie at the top of the Ivy League standings as Princeton beat Yale today. Princeton and Yale both 5-1. Harvard 4-1 with this game pending.
you got to believe they've gotten that score on the Harvard sideline, too, to know that, you know, they are back into it.
So once again, they bring in a double tight end set, does Harvard. Harvard moving right to left on your radio dial. It's an I formation backfield with the fullback in there, something they haven't done a lot of. Noah Van Neel is the fullback, and they've actually, the only times I can remember them doing it is these two plays they've run inside their own five. And they've got Corey Mazza, who has been very quiet, split out alone to the left. He is matched up with Chris Wynn. O'Hagan under center. Post and Ted Harvard from their own three. O'Hagan flips in the end zone. He's down at the safety. The Quakers get a safety as O'Hagan came tripped coming out from under center. It is a huge play. Not only does it make it 22-13, a two-possession game, but now the Quakers get the football.
Oh, my.
He just tripped, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, he just comes out from center. Looks like he's getting ready to throw the football.
Yeah, he just tripped, I think.
He gets tangled up with one of the offensive linemen. The feet get tangled. Doesn't matter. He goes down in the end zone, not even tackled. And, oh, what a huge break for Penn.
They deserve one.
They do deserve one. They do. Absolutely.
So we kept talking about how big another score would be to make it a two-possession game. That's not exactly what I thought would happen. But it makes it 22-13, makes it a nine-point game. And as you hear a lot of commentators say, I know John Madden talks about this a lot when he does games, it's not the 2 points that gets you in most situations. It's giving up the football. In this case, the 2 points is huge. And then you throw on top that Penn gets the football back, and that's just phenomenal.
Yeah, I think in this case, the 2 points is much more valuable than getting the football back, because deep in that territory, Penn had been very effective last time in forcing the punt. I think the defense was poised to do it again, so they were going to get the ball back more than likely, but this just made it a moot point. They didn't have to worry about it, so they are going to get the ball back. They got the 2 points.
22-13.
It rests with the offense now to see if they can control the ball here a little bit.
Marcus Lawrence and Chris Wynn are back at their own 25 to return the free kick of Matt Schindel. And Schindel will punt it away.
Oh, man.
He gets off a good one, a good high spiral. Marcus Lawrence, we've heard a lot about this freshman, takes it at the 22, straight ahead to the 30, 35, makes a couple of men miss, gets out to the 39-yard line. Good return by Lawrence. Last safety for the Quakers, you got to go back to 2002 against Princeton, so it has been a while. Could not think of a better time for that one. Liam O'Hagan trips in the end zone, makes it 22-13, and the Quakers will take over first and 10 at their own 39. Harvard with two timeouts, and just one first down on this drive would be huge. To bleed as much of the clock down as you can.
Well, the clock's going to start right now. Again, that new rule this year is not so new anymore. I guess we're 10 weeks into the season, but the clock starts after that change of possession.
First and 10-10 at their own 39. Robert Irvin under center. The wide receivers are split. Offset eye in the backfield. Sandberg, the defect. Lepistoe, the wide man to the right, comes in motion. And on first down, Irvin hands it off to Sandberg right up the middle, comes to the 40, and he's pushed backwards on a great play by the middle linebacker for Harvard, Glenn Doris. He read that very well. Looks like Sandberg got ahead of steam, but Doris met him at the 40 and pushed him back to gain a one. It'll bring up second and nine with 5:49 and counting to play in the game.
Well, that's just a case where you talk about momentum. They gave him a gain of one, and he was actually tackled about 5 yards into the backfield after the play was over. You said it right. Morris met him right at the pass. Made a really formed classic hit on them.
5.5 minutes, play clock down to 10. Quakers taking their time, coming to the line of scrimmage. On second and 9, 10 from their own 40. I formation backfield, Sandberg the defect. Sandberg will take the handoff, running left. He's going to be stacked up, and he's going to be dropped for a loss of one back to the 39-yard line. Clock continuing to roll, 5:14, 5:13.
Well, I tell you, you're in no man's land here. You really want to get a first down, and you really want to take some time off that clock, but you just don't know. I mean, this is what the coaches get paid to do, to make these calls right now, as the clock goes under 5 minutes, 20 seconds left on the play clock. I think they got to run the football here.
How about a little bootleg to the tight end, maybe?
Well, they could do that. You know, the risk of putting the ball in the air is the incomplete pass, of course, and Well, we'll see.
Third and 10, Penn at their own 39. Irvin under center, I formation backfield, wide receiver split. Irvin, play action, back to throw, fires on the right side, complete the Stinsler, 45, still running, first down into Harvard territory, down to the 44-yard line. Mitch Stinsler carried the entire back seven of the Crimson for an extra 5 yards. It's a first down for the Quakers. Clock stops when they move the chains with 4:28 to play, but Mitch Stinsler having a game here this afternoon.
Well, I'm going to nominate you as Coach of the Year because there they go with the bootleg to Stinsler, just like you suggested they should. They make the completion. Sisler does a terrific job of driving down the field to get that first down yardage, and he has been a weapon offensively here this afternoon.
Now Harvard's got to start thinking about using timeouts with 4:15. They need two scores, of course, 22-13. First and 10, Penn at the Harvard 44. Irvin under center. I'll sit eye in the backfield of Muash Champong, the deep back, and Kelms will take the handoff, and he'll get drilled at the 48-yard line. He had no chance on that play, exploding through the line for Harvard. Michael Berg, the defensive tackle, his 16th tackle for a loss this season, Hench.
Well, this is where that Harvard defense is really going to gamble. That time, Berg did just that. I mean, he took a seam and just blew in there. I don't even think it was a blitz, man. I think he just, you know, took a chance on that slant action going to his right side. And
play clock never started.
Caught Kelms before he got started.
Everybody's kind of standing around. I know to Robert Irvin's credit, he wasn't going anywhere until the play clock started running.
The game clock didn't start either.
We've got 3:38 to play, and the officials are all talking. Boy, what a big catch and run by Sisler that was.
Yeah, and that was not an easy catch. Ball a little bit thrown behind him, and he actually was in some traffic, too. His other catches had been relatively routine, but that one required a little agility.
And, I mean, I think they put 3:47 back on the clock as the clock got all messed up there. Now the clock
not
will
sure
start running.
Right.
The play clock is still not running. And we've got issues here. The play clock must be down because they're not running. Now it starts. Now they're down to 23, but everything's out of whack here.
I don't think it was 47. Because it was not a first down. It was going under 4 minutes when that ball was snapped on the last snap.
So it's going to be, regardless of when we get started, it's going to be second and 14 at the Harvard 49. 3:47 to play. Penn looking to snap a three-game losing streak. And boy, would this be huge if they could hold on for this one, beating Harvard for the first time in 3 years. Now the clock runs. Everything's in sync. The play clock at 20. Quakers huddle up. They come to the line of scrimmage, second and 14. Tyler Fisher in the game for the first time at wide receiver for the Quakers, out wide to the left. Offset eye in the backfield. Amuash Champong, the deep back. Irvin under center. Robert Irvin, play action. Robert Irvin back to throw. Robert Irvin going down the middle. Lefisto's got a step, and he makes the catch at the 15-yard line in front of Steven Williams. Lefisto with a brilliant catch down to the 15. First and 10, Penn.
I don't believe what I just saw there. Penn going for the bomb with just over 3 minutes left in the game, and I think Steven Williams really outsmarted himself that time. The safety, I guess it was Steven Williams.
Yes.
He sort of tried to go for the interception, and that was a mistake because Braden Lepisto was right there to snag it and dragged it in and made the catch. So, oh my goodness.
3 minutes to play, clock running, double tight end set. Coop, the wing to the left, eye formation in the backfield, Irvin under center on first down at the handoff to Sandberg, running left, bounces it outside, 15 to the 10, 5, flag thrown as Sandberg run out of bounds at the 2, you can guarantee that's a hold as Sandberg turned the corner. Great effort by Joe, but it's going to go for naught.
Well, they're going to get Nick Sisler on a hold here, and you know, this is the same kind of situation you could call on virtually every play. He does a great job of pinning the defensive end for Harvard to let Sandberg get to the outside. And so there goes the flag, and there goes the effort. That's just, I don't know.
But going back to the catch by Lepisto, what a huge play that was.
I don't believe that call. Gutsy, that's why, you know, did you predict that one too?
No.
Okay.
Gutsy. So it'll be first and 20. I got to imagine Harvard starts using their timeouts here, don't you think? They need two scores, 2:51 to play, first down for Penn.
I didn't see whether Sandberg got knocked out of bounds. I guess he did the
Yeah, he was knocked out of bounds.
I saw the flag and I stopped watching.
Here come the Quakers, first and 20. Double tight end set. Both tight ends to the right. Kuntz the wing. On first down, it's a handoff to Sandberg right. Cuts it back in the middle. Burrows his way inside the 25 down to the 23, and Harvard will take their second timeout right here. With 2:43 to play, Harvard has one remaining. And we will take a break as well. 2:43 to play in the fourth quarter. Penn 22, Harvard 13. You're listening to Quakers Football on the Penn Sports Network.
This is Philadelphia's Christian Radio, 560 WFIO.
Fans, if you're looking for a cheesesteak in University City, there's no better place than Abner's Cheesesteaks, a neighborhood tradition. Located at 38th and Chestnut Street and abnerscheesesteaks.com. Abner's provides a full menu of sandwiches and also is available to cater your next event. For more information, visit their website at www.abnerscheesesteaks.com. Abner's Cheesesteaks, a proud sponsor of Penn Football.
2:43 to play. The Quakers trying to hold on and pull the upset. And Sun Harvard, 22-13. Penn leading the Crimson. Penn has outscored Harvard 2-0 here in the second half. And a late two-run homer doing the damage.
Coach talking to the referee again. I think he's still troubled by that holding call. I know he was really displeased with the officiating last week against Princeton on several counts.
Rightfully so, in my opinion.
Yeah.
The second down and 19 with 2:43 to play in the game. Harvard has one timeout remaining. High formation backfield. Marcus Lawrence, the lone wide receiver, split out wide to the right and all kinds of antics up front as Irvin was late coming out with the football, all kinds of movement.
He almost fumbled that snap. I don't know whether somebody moved. We're going in the wrong direction here, though. It's a false start. And that may have been, again, why he bobbled that snap. So they blew it dead before the play actually started.
Well, we were talking in the break, you know, do they kick a field goal if they get close enough? You know, what do? You go for it? They're kind of making up their own minds with these penalties. Now you're looking at second and 24. Back at the 29, I don't think you don't need more points. You just don't want to do anything silly here and give Harvard a quick strike. Second and 24, Irvin under center. Kuntz the wing to the left, I formation, handoff Sandberg, running right up the middle, breaks a couple tackles, gets down to the 25-yard line. He'll gain four, and that will set the Quakers up with a third and 20, and Harvard will take their final timeout with 2 minutes and 38 seconds remaining. Now the key is you can run the clock. You can run the clock down under 2 minutes here.
I think Joe was kind of surprised that he got through there after some initial traffic unscathed. I think, you know, he was kind of expecting to get hit again, and it wasn't one of his typical efforts. I would think they're going to try the field goal because let's suppose Harvard scores and makes it 22-20, then a field goal, onside kick field goal, puts them in a position to win the game. If Penn gets another field goal here, it's a two-touchdown game.
As good as Braden's been today, though, assuming they're not going to get much on this third down play, you're still looking at a 40-41.
Yeah.
And I know you're gun-shy, and like I said, he's kicked great today. I don't even take the chance of a block and something long that they can return. I would just run a fourth down play, give them 75 yards. I think it's different if it's a seven-point game, but the fact that it's nine...
Hey, you've been so good in your calls today. I am deferring, absolutely deferring to you. And I think we ought to get in the coach's headset and let him know what you're thinking here.
Oh, believe me.
Just about every time.
It will be brought up that I called that bootleg this week. So here we go. Third down and 20. Head at the Harvard 25. Irvin will work out of the gun. I can't believe they're going to throw the ball here. Amu Ashampong to his left. Three wides in the game. They go slot left. Harvard showing blitz. Irvin's just going to give it to Kelms, and he's going to be hit in the backfield, and he's going to lose 4 yards back to the 29. They just sold out, and Ryan Pulley and Eric Schultz, the two outside linebackers, just had a meeting. Well, now you're looking at a 46-yard field goal, and there's no way that's happening.
You've answered your own question there. They're going to do the same thing they did last time and play clock, 5 yard penalty.
Play clock just now is starting. I don't even, I might just run the play and give them the football right there. And
I think they'll punt it again just because they've had such good success hanging it up there. And
clock rolling, 158, 157, play clock down to 3, 2, 1, and 0. Quakers will indeed take that penalty with 154 to play, and they will throw Anthony Malolo out there. And I can't imagine that you're not going to see 11 guys on the line of scrimmage for Harvard. And I guess in this situation, Malillo's told, if you don't get this clean, just fall down, right? They will not put 11 on the line. Steven Williams will be the deep man. The snap back to Malolo. No pressure. Malolo just pooches it up there. Williams is going to take it at the 4. He's going to be hit. He's going to be dropped at the 2-yard line. Joey Brown.
Oh, my.
With great coverage. Williams, I guess, his think thought process was he's trying to make something happen because I don't know why you catch that football at the 2. But with 1:46 to play, Harvard down 9, needs 97 yards with no timeouts and an onside kick and another score.
I don't know whether it makes any difference or not, but that's just a poor decision by Williams. Joey Brown bearing right down on him.
The way that that ball was going to hit at the 2, chances are that ball's going to go into the end.
Yeah, he's got to wave it off and block Joey Brown is what he's got to do.
How about this defense today, Hench?
How about it?
13 points, none in the second half. So here comes Harvard. There's a new quarterback for Harvard.
And the clock's running.
This is Chris Tizzotti in the game, and he's going to be back to throw. He's going to throw it on the left side. It's tipped in the backfield by J.J. Stanton, incomplete. Wow, quite a time to make a quarterback change. I wonder if O'Hagan's hurt.
I wonder if when he fell down last time, remember taking that safety, he went down. Didn't look like he was injured, but he's standing over there on the sideline.
All right, Chris Tizzotti, you've been sitting all day. You're on your own, too. You're down 9, no timeouts, minute and a half. Go get him, kid. Tizzotti's in shotgun. 4 wide, slot to either side, Dawson to his right. Tizzotti back to throw, under pressure, throwing across the middle, and it is complete. Out to the 12-yard line, making the catch, Matt Ruff, who's been the best receiver for Harvard today. That's a gain of 15 yards out to the 17-yard line. Looks like Corey Geddon had a shot at it. But he couldn't bring it in. Clock stops with 1:14. Quakers leading 22-13. Clock starts. Tizzotti lifts the leg and a 4 wide receiver set.
Oh, yeah.
We've got movement up front.
Oh, yeah, that helps.
Tom Roger, the tackle.
Not only that, that wastes a little bit of time on the clock.
The clock will start again as soon as the ball is set. It'll be a 5-yard penalty. Take Harvard back inside the 15. You know, I was down today when they presented the Coach Lake plaque, and I was standing next to the linebacker coach, Cliff Swanky, and I just looked at him, and I go, I have a good feeling about today. And he looked at me, and he went, so do I.
Good. You've been on the ball all day today.
First and 15 for Harvard from their own 12. Tizzotti in shotgun with Dawson to his right. Tizzotti back to throw. Has time. Floating it down the left sideline. He is tipped away, and it is incomplete. Almost caught under deflection by Matt Ruff. They went after Joey Brown again, but that time Joey Brown was equal to the task. Step for step with Ruff, knocked it away. It is second and 15. We've got 61 seconds left. 22-13, and 61 seconds away from beating Harvard for the first time in 3 years, breaking a 3-game losing streak, assuring themselves of at least a .500 record, and making the trip to Ithaca oh so much more pleasant next weekend.
You wish Joey Brown would be given a little bit more of a cushion here on that. He was step for step, but I'd sure like to see him behind the receiver.
Second and 15, Tizzotti back to throw, firing it across the middle. It's tipped and almost intercepted by Jake Colabella. Great play. He wanted Ruff across the middle. Colabella got his left hand out and knocked it down. Third down. 57 seconds left. I think the Quakers defense smells blood in the water now.
Well, Harvard has no choice in this situation but to go for the next two downs. They're not going to punt it away. Colabella just did a really good job adjusting to the ball from his linebacker position that time.
Third and 15, Harvard from their own 12. Tizzotti in the gun, 4 wide, slot to either side. Tizzotti takes the snap, he's straight back to throw. Quakers coming across the middle, and the pass is knocked away, almost intercepted by Joey Brown. Flag comes in from about 30 yards behind the play. That was awfully clean to me. Let's see what it's about.
I don't think that's what the flag was on. That's just a great hit by Scotty Williams in his last home game. at Franklin Field. He popped Matt Buff coming across the middle, who was reaching for the football. That was a clean hit, so I don't know what the penalty was.
Let's look on the replay. Joey Brown had a step on him. Scotty Williams did unload on him. It's going to be against the Quakers, whatever it is.
Well, we'll find out.
They're going to call defensive holding against the Quakers. I guess maybe Brown had a handle. That's ticky-tack at this point. It's an automatic first down and a 5-yard penalty, but 52 seconds left, and Harvard moving at a snail's pace here from their own 22. Chris Pizzotti, the junior backup quarterback, lifts the leg, and a four wide receiver set takes the snap. He's back to throw. He's got time. He's under pressure. Naheem Harris giving chase. Pizzotti eludes him, rolling to his right, still rolling. Fires down to the 30-yard line, and is the catch made? No, incomplete. At the 30, Alex Rowe, sophomore wide receiver, one-hopped it with 41 seconds left.
Almost would have been better had he made that catch because he was inbounded. It wasn't a first down. But they chewed up a lot of clock with the Pizzotti scrambling around back there trying to find a receiver.
So second and 10 for Penn at their own 23. Check that, second and 10 for Harvard. Four wides in the game. Pizzotti's in the gun. Pizzotti takes the snap. He's straight back to throw. He's under pressure, firing it across the middle. Pass is caught at the 35-yard line by Corey Mazza. Corey Mazza's streak is in jeopardy. He had caught 7 touchdown passes in 7 straight games coming in. First down for Harvard after the 36 to 33 seconds. Clock stops while they move the chain. Clock will start right now, 32-31. Pizzotti will just spike the football and stop the clock with 30 seconds. First to second and 10, Harvard at their own 36. So, barring the miracle of all miracles, the Quakers will break their streak of 3 straight overtime games. They will break their 3-game losing streak. They will assure themselves of at least a 500 record. And they will go to 500 in the Ivy League. Second end, 10 for Harvard. At their own 36, Pizzotti in the gun, takes the step, back to throw, fires across the middle, passes caught into Penn territory, down to the 46-yard line. Matt Legacy made the catch, but he paid for it. Was that Scotty Williams again doing that? Big hit late in the secondary. First down for Harvard, down to the 46 of Penn, 24 seconds left. Ball is set, clock starts, 23-22. Pizzotti takes the snap, he's back to throw. He is floating it on the right side, looking for Mazza. Incomplete. Great coverage. Tyson Margle came over, knocked it away from Mazza. And that'll bring up second and 10 with 15 seconds left. So it might not be an Ivy title year for the Quakers, but this one feels pretty good, Hench.
Feels real good. And, you know, I still want to see these 15 seconds go. I think I've just lost all my confidence in boys these last 3 weeks, so I need 15 seconds to tick off the clock.
Second and 10 at the Penn 46. Pizzotti in shotgun, four wide, trip to the right. Pizzotti back to throw. Firing it down the seam, a diving attempt by Bro, incomplete. At the 30-yard line of Penn, there's 11 seconds remaining, and it's third and 10.
I don't know what it's called when you have 8 defensive backs. You know, you go nickel, dime,
quarter,
7 is maybe it's a quarter. It's even more half dollar.
Half dollar, Susan B. Anthony, possibly.
They got 8 defensive backs out there, and I think that's the right play.
11-10 at the Penn 46. Penn leading 22-13. Pizzotti in shotgun, back to throw. He's got time. He's under pressure. He's rolling to his right. 6 seconds. Pizzotti. Pump fake, still rolling, fires on the run, it is caught, out of bounds, no time left, the game is over, and the Penn Quakers have defeated Harvard 22-13. A huge victory for this program, which has been snake-bitten for the last month. They get back on track today, they upset visiting Harvard, 22-13, the final score, the Quaker defense out, outstanding in the second half. They do not allow Harvard to score a point in the third and fourth quarters. In fact, the only points were scored by the defense, a safety, midway through the fourth quarter when Harvard quarterback Liam O'Hagan tripped in his own end zone. 22-13, the final score. Penn defeats Harvard. Now, like we said, Hench, no Ivy title this year, but I think this is the type of win when you've got a team specifically with a sophomore quarterback and all the guys they got coming back next year, you can really use this as a springboard into better, bigger and better things.
Well, if there was any question about whether the Penn kids had any quit in them, they delivered the answer here this afternoon, because these kids played hard from the first whistle to the last whistle. And it's the kind of game, as we said way back in the beginning, Scott, or Matt, when Harvard has such an easy time on that first drive for their touchdown, you think, oh my, you know, if they were ever going to be deflated, this is the time to say, well, who needs to be bothered with all this aggravation? But these kids for Penn just wouldn't stop. They came right back. They answered that score. They hung tough. And I just watched at the end of the game, Ray Friari, the defensive coordinator, couldn't get to Scotty Williams to give him a big hug quick enough. And that's the kind of commitment and togetherness that you admire and respect in this program, and I think it's why they played so well today and came away with this victory.
22-13, the final score. Penn defeats Harvard. Take a break, and we come back to Comcast Sportsnet post-game show. You're listening to Quakers Football on the Penn Sports Network.
And men's basketball season tickets are on sale now. Purchasing season tickets is the only way to ensure that you'll have the best seat in the historic Palestra as the Red and Blue make their run for a third straight Ivy League title. Purchase your tickets by going online at PennAthletics.com. Fans, if you're looking for a cheesesteak in University City, there's no better place than Abner's Cheesesteaks, a neighborhood tradition located at 38th and Chestnut Street, and AbnersCheesesteaks.com. Abner's provides a full menu of sandwiches and also is available to cater your next event. For more information, visit their website at www.AbnersCheesesteaks.com. Abner's Cheesesteaks, a proud sponsor of Penn Football.
Red and blue pride, that's what every fan of Penn Athletics feels every day. And now you can get your very own red and blue pride merchandise at the brand new online store at PennAthletics.com. Penn Athletics' new store features logo apparel from brand names such as Adidas, Antigua, Cutter & Buck, and Russell Athletic. And it's the best way for a diehard Quaker fan to show their true passion. Show your red and blue pride today by purchasing officially licensed gear from PennAthletics.com. With Amtrak Share Fares, two's company and three's the deal, because for a limited time, groups of 3 to 6 can save 25 to 50% on Amtrak fares throughout the Northeast. The bigger the group, the bigger the savings. So gather the crowd and call 1-800-USA-RAIL or visit Amtrak.com today. And don't forget discount code H620. Not valid on Acela Express, Metroliner, Clockers, Downeaster, or Keystone train. 3-day advance purchase, blackouts, and other restrictions apply. Call 1-800-USA-RAIL or visit Amtrak.com for details.
Welcome to the 2006 Penn Quaker Football Postgame Show, sponsored by Comcast Sportsnet. Here's your hosts, Matt Leon and Hedge Murray.
22-13, the Penn Quakers stun Harvard here in a great ball game at Franklin Field. The Penn Quakers improved to 5-4 on the season. Aside from the win and what it does numbers-wise and statistics-wise, Hedge, hats off to the kids, to the coaches. You and I have been watching football long enough that in that situation, teams losing heartbreakers like that week in, week out, you've seen enough teams, pro, college, high school, just kind of fold up the tent and say, let's try next year. And boy, did you just not get a great effort today. You got a yeoman effort against probably the most talented team in the Ivy League that was playing for an Ivy title. And you came in here, took the lead into the half, and then you really just punched them in the mouth in the second half and didn't let them do anything.
Well, as we said before, it became a game of field position in the second half, and Penn was able to get itself out of its own hole and put Harvard in it, and that allows you to do some things defensively and offensively that, you know, work to your advantage. And, you know, it wasn't a turnover game in the second half either. It was just a smash-mouth football by both teams. We got to give Harvard some credit there, too. And I think as I look back on the last couple of games, and as we were going into the Princeton game, trying to do the math and figure out what it would take with, you know, for Penn if they beat Princeton to have two losses and still get a piece of it, mathematically, things worked out the way they should have, and they would have been right in the thick of this going up to Cornell next weekend to get a tie or be in the race for a tie, but that's not going to happen. It really doesn't matter. What matters here is that this group of kids and coaches pulled themselves together and beat a very fine Harvard football team in what has to be a most satisfying victory.
And, I mean, really, this is the first game. This is the first win over a real quality Ivy League team, I think, since the 04 season. I think this is the first time they've played one of the other upper echelon teams the last couple seasons and came out with a victory. I mean, they've done well. They've beaten the Columbias and they've beaten the Dartmouth. They beat Yale last year. It wasn't a great Yale team, in my opinion. This is the first time I think they've faced one of the other title contenders and beaten them. And I think that's got to do worlds of good for this team's confidence. These younger kids, there's a boatload of talent. So just all kinds of good feelings right here.
Well, as you said also, that bus ride up to Cornell's never fun, but it would have been a disaster next week had they not come away with this one today. So now they got something to play for up there. They can go, you know, I had said all along, I thought they ought to just have some fun, and I think in their own way out there today, they had some fun.
22-13, Penn beats Harvard. We'll take a break when we come back, player of the game, and we'll take a look at our final stats. You're listening to Quakers Football on the Penn Sports Network.
Diet Pepsi presents a light, crisp, and refreshing look at new music genres, like hip-hopera.
Rolling with my homie, checking out the club. Got the bling-bling, baby, and I'm looking for love. Player-hating homies, stop that fronting. Holla at the DJ, this is a big bumpin'. This cheap life of his dampen, Boston moves so ill. I grab the microphone to flaunt my skills. Got more flow, that's for sure, I'm the real dealio. MC to the isle, that's for shizzle. MC to the isle, that's for shizzle. MC to the isle, that's for shizzle. MC to the isle, that's for shizzle.
Well, there you have it, a light, crisp, and refreshing look at hip-hopera. If you're looking for something else that's light, crisp, and refreshing, grab yourself an ice-cold Diet Pepsi. Light, crisp, refreshing Diet Pepsi.
Penn men's basketball season tickets are on sale now. Purchasing season tickets is the only way to ensure that you'll have the best seats in the historic Palestra as the Red and Blue make their run for a third straight Ivy League title. Purchase your tickets by going online at PennAthletics.com.
Comcast Sportsnet postgame show continuing here at Franklin Field. A very joyous Franklin Field where the Quakers have defeated Harvard 22-13. Time now for our player of the game, Hench, and we've decided to split it between a couple of unlikely fellows. How about Anthony Melillo, the Quakers' junior punter, and Nick Sissler, the Quakers' fullback, who just a beast in the passing game, and really, I think, provided an option that hadn't been there for a long time, and just some great catches, none bigger than his catch on the Quakers' final possession on a third down play that kept the clock moving, gave him a first down, and really helped them burn more time off the clock. So Nick Sissler, four catches, 61 yards. He also carried the ball three times for 10 yards. And then Anthony Melillo, nine punts for 37-yard average along a 47. That's very pedestrian, but four inside the 20. And in the fourth quarter, two punts downed inside the five. Really is the key to the game because the one sets up the safety that puts the game away when he punts, he pins them inside their own two.
Now, when the game was on the line and they need to do just what you said, put them back deep in their own territory, Anthony just couldn't have been better on those two punts. And we've seen that all season. So, I mean, we could say we're giving him the award, you know, the player of the game award for his work all season. But today he was extraordinary. And Nick Sissler became an offensive weapon at something that he had not been all season. He's always been a terrific blocker. But today he really had some big plays offensively that helped the Quakers put this game in the victory column.
Looking at the final stats for the Quakers, Joe Sandberg against the top rushing defense in the country. 23 carries, 86 hard-earned yards, two touchdowns. Brian Walker, three carries for 17 as a slash-type quarterback. Nick Sissler, three for 10 that we mentioned. Robert Irvin, not the completion percentage you're used to, 19 of 40, but 192 yards, pretty smart with the football. The one interception when the wide receiver fell down. Walker was 2 of 2 throwing for 10 yards. Matt Carey, 4 for 61. Receiving, we mentioned Sisler, 4 for 61. Lepetto, 3 for 32, including that huge 33-yard bomb on the last possession. And Chris Mizell, 3 catches, all in the second half, all of them clutch for 19 yards. On the Harvard side, Clifton Dawson, strangely only 16 carries. He had 119 yards, including the 55-yard run that set up the first touchdown. In the process, he becomes the all-time leading rusher in Ivy League history. But we were talking in the break, Hinch, such a weapon, especially when they were sputtering. I think you got to get him the ball more. I was really surprised his lack of touches. 7 for 16 in the second half.
Well, if you take that 55-yarder away from him, it becomes, I mean, for some backs,
for 64.
It's still a good day, but they had his number, and especially in the second half, they were doing a much more effective job at getting him at the point of attack and not letting him get out of that grasp, which he did a couple of times in the first half. So, I don't know, Harvard, you know, they were having great success throwing the ball, especially, you know, when Greg Ambrogi went down in that wide corner. So you wonder, you think maybe if Clifton Dawson's playing for me, I want to have him have more than 16 touches, even if Penn's playing good defense.
Yes, especially in a game where you were never, you know, you were down 9 with 6 minutes left, but you were down no more than 7, you know, for most of the second and third quarter. So I think, you know, if you're going to look back and second-guess Tim Murphy and the Harvard coaches, that would be the one thing I would say, that they didn't get Dawson involved enough. Liam O'Hagan, 14 of 27, really got hot in the second quarter, and it looked like they were going to start doing some things offensively, but the Quakers adjusted, and he was really not a factor. Only 156 yards and 2 interceptions. He did throw the 1 touchdown on the only touchdown drive of the day for Harvard. Then Chris Pizzotti, the backup, came in for that Lance Feudal drive, 3 of 10, 46 yards. Matt Luck, 5 for 88. Clifton Dawson, 4 catches for 27. Legacy and Mazza, each a couple of catches each. And Corey Mazza, I think that's another key. That's one of the best receivers in the Ivy League, and he was non-factor, absolutely invisible.
He denied his touchdown, and as you said, I think Penn had his number.
Yeah, they just did a phenomenal job. I mean, I think they've had better defensive efforts from a score standpoint to shut out against Columbia for all intents and purposes. They almost didn't allow a touchdown against Dartmouth, but by easily the best defensive effort of the season for the Quakers when you consider who they were playing. They forced the 4 first-half turnovers, and they win 22-13. We're going to take our final break here on the Comcast Sportsnet postgame show, wrap things up, get you ready for the season finale next week up at Ithaca against Cornell. 22-13, Penn beat Harvard. You're listening to Quakers Football on the Penn Sports Network.
Fans, if you're looking for a cheesesteak in University City, there's no better place than Abner's Cheesesteaks, a neighborhood tradition, located at 38th and Chestnut Street and abnerscheesesteaks.com. Abner's provides a full menu of sandwiches and also is available to cater your next event. For more information, visit their website at www.abnerscheesesteaks.com. Abner's Cheesesteaks, a proud sponsor of Penn Football.
Red and blue pride, that's what every fan of Penn Athletics feels every day. And now you can get your very own red and blue pride merchandise at the brand new online store at PennAthletics.com. Penn Athletics' new store features logo apparel from brand names such as Adidas, Antigua, Cutter & Buck, and Russell Athletic. And it's the best way for a diehard Quaker fan to show their true passion. Show your red and blue pride today by purchasing officially licensed gear from PennAthletics.com. With Amtrak Share Fares, two's company and 3's a deal, because for a limited time, groups of 3 to 6 can save 25 to 50% on Amtrak fares throughout the Northeast. The bigger the group, the bigger the savings. So gather the crowd and call 1-800-USA-RAIL or visit Amtrak.com today. And don't forget discount code H620. Not valid on Acela Express, Metroliner, Clockers, Downeaster, or Keystone train. 3-day advance purchase, blackouts, and other restrictions apply. Call 1-800-USA-RAIL or visit Amtrak.com for details.
22-13, the final score as we wrap up the Comcast Sportsnet postgame show here. The Quakers defeat Harvard to improve to 5-4 on the season. Next week they visit Cornell, a Cornell team that lost to Columbia this week. So, I mean, you really, in this Ivy League, week to week, you sometimes don't know what you're going to get. But had Penn lost this game, next week was going to be a struggle. You had to think that was going to be tough going all the way up there, last game of the season. But this wind's got to energize everyone. Put a little jump in your step, go up there, and you take care of business. And all of a sudden, you can't wait for 2007 to get here.
Well, as you said, you also guaranteed at least a 500 season, and a win up there in Ithaca next week would make it a 6-4 season. And given the trials and tribulations that they've endured this year, I think you have to feel that 6-4 is a decent outcome. Not an Ivy League championship, but decent. Personally, I hate to go up there and play Cornell because it's usually cold and snowy and icy, and it's some years it's been a game that they had to win to maintain the championship. But our game against them last year here at Franklin Field was a game that really had no meaning in terms of the standings, and we've talked enough about all the problems that confronted the team last year, but it was a very disappointing end of that season, and it's going to be important, I think, for the kids to go up there, and the coaches, I know the coaches will go up there well-focused, but to remember that for the seniors, it's their last game. You know, they want to go away with that victory taste in their mouth, not the other. And so that's the way they want to put the cap on the season. And I believe they can do it.
22-13, Penn wins, 5-4 next week at the 1 o'clock kickoff on the Penn Sports Network. You can catch the pregame a half hour earlier on PennAthletics.com. Thanks to John Linton, our board op at the Penn Sports Network mothership, keeping us online. Many thanks to Hench Murray. My name is Matt Leon. Penn defeats Harvard 22-13. You've been listening to Quakers Football on the Penn Sports Network. Good night, everyone.
You've been listening to 2006 Penn Quaker Football on 560 WFIL. Brought to you by Abner's Cheesesteaks of University City, DNA, Comcast Sportsnet, the Hilton Inn at Penn and Penn Restaurant, Independence Blue Cross, the Holiday Inn, Philadelphia Historic District, Eco Energy, Pepsi, the Philadelphia Inquirer and Daily News, Sprinter, United Healthcare, and World Cafe Live. Audio of this broadcast is the property of University of Pennsylvania and 560 WFIO. Use of the audio content of this broadcast without consent is prohibited.